fly atop the skyline of downtown Chicago to 38 states and Canada. Your host for this evening, Justin Kaufman.
Coronavirus cases now surpass SARS, over 6,000 cases and growing. Also, a startling number of Americans believe the virus has something to do with the beer, which I guess it makes sense. I mean, how do you feel after drinking a couple of those? Electric scooters are coming back to Chicago this summer. You ready to take your life into your own hands again? And it's been 1 year since we all learned the name Jussie Smollett. And it's also been 11 years since Rod Blagojevich was removed from office. What, no anniversary for Drew Peterson? It's 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Let's get right into our big story. We start tonight. The world's still mourning for Kobe Bryant, his daughter, and the seven others that were that perished in the helicopter crash on Sunday. Today, the news has shifted to the helicopter crash and the helicopter itself, which, whether it was up to code, is still a question. But last night, we talked about the media, specifically TMZ, and how they were irresponsible for moving forward with the story before the police could notify the families. Today, Harvey Levin, the leader of TMZ, he spoke out. And he said that he got Kobe's representatives to give him the green light to publish, saying that the family was okay with it. So does that change your thoughts tonight? When asked about the other families, Levin admitted that that was a fair point. He doesn't know. But to his point, he's trying to tell the Kobe Bryant story. He also went on to say that journalists and law enforcement, they don't do the same jobs. So I ask you, does it change your thoughts from last night, from the convo we had where many people called in emotional saying that the media overstepped their bounds? Do you still believe TMZ should have waited to break the Kobe news till all the families were notified? Or was it okay that they went ahead and published with the consent of Kobe's family? It's a tough call. And I'm looking forward to hearing what you have to say, if it changes your mind at all, because it kind of changes mine. I was very, convinced, swayed by the popular opinion of phone calls we had on the program last night. Very emotional. Talking about how the media has overstepped their bounds, that they are pathetic and disgusting, that they should not be going ahead if the families have not been notified. But you hear Harvey Levin today, almost listening to our show last night, responding to those concerns, saying he was on the phone for more than an hour with representatives of the Bryant family. And they gave the go-ahead to say, go ahead and publish. Should Harvey Levin be waiting for everybody's names to come out, even though they're not celebrities and he's in the game of celebrity news and journalism? Or should he go ahead? Because he knows ABC News and NBC News and the LA Times and everybody else that covers celebrities is going to do the same thing. I know it's not a popular opinion, and I know that I'm part of the media, but I'm not sure that TMZ did anything wrong here. And to be fair, I know it's real easy to heap on TMZ because the brand stands for muckrakery, right? They're the ones that are always kind of slumming it to get the story. But in this case, I'm not sure they did anything wrong. I would argue that it's an unfortunate side effect to the fact that you're covering celebrities and journalism, that there were others on the helicopter, that perhaps their families were not notified. Now, again, this all stemmed from the LA County Sheriff tweeting out saying it's so hard to do this job when people like TMZ are trying to tell the story before we can notify next of kin. Heartbreaking. But we still don't know if that happened or not. Last night, we were under the assumption that the Bryant family didn't know about. Now, Harvey Levin, if you trust him and his story, he said, no, we followed the sources. The Bryant family is the source. It's not like he just found it in the ether and said, oh, I ripped it off of a radar and I think I know it was Kobe Bryant. No, he was in contact with the family. The family confirmed it. They were notified first. And maybe that's the case with the other families as well. I don't know. That's not mentioned in the story. Here we go again with kind of assuming. But for the most part, it sounds like Harvey Levin and TMZ, they did what they're supposed to do as journalists, covering celebrity. It's not a great story to cover. And ultimately, if you're in that business, a business to try and get the story out before any other media outlet, there are going to be some moments where unfortunate things happen, where perhaps a family member doesn't know what happened before the press announces it. Now, to be fair, the TMZ story that broke the news that Kobe Bryant had passed did not mention the names of the other people that were on board. If I'm not mistaken, the first story was just about Kobe Bryant, not even his daughter. So to be fair, TMZ didn't necessarily report that the other passengers had perished before their families were notified. 312-981-7200. If you want to pick that story up and talk about it tonight, I'm all for it. We're on the air till 11 o'clock tonight. Got a lot to talk about. And Greg Flam's coming in to do a swap meet, which is great. Of course, if you have any memorabilia or souvenirs or anything you want to talk or see if it's worth anything, if you're thinking about throwing something away, we look at it, and you want to know if it's worth something, then this is the segment for you coming up at 10 o'clock, 312-981-7200. And Heather Sharone's going to join us, as she does on Wednesdays, to give us a little review of the state of the state, what came out of it, the reaction from Springfield. Also talk about some stories that are happening in Chicago, including the return of the electric scooters. All right, let's go to the phones, shall we? First off, 217 says, TMZ doesn't practice journalism. They engage in predatory action. The TMZ jerk, in this case, I guess Harvey Levin, should have his pathetic mouth slapped. I don't know about that. It seems a little harsh. Just because you don't like celebrity journalism, that's what they do. You don't like tone. A lot of what we know about TMZ is just the tone, the big letters, the brand. That's a tone. I still would stand by the fact that what they're doing is journalism. In this case, it seems like they cover their tracks. Let's go to Gwen. Gwen, what do you think? Are you...
Hey, you know what? Now that you... I was listening over the whole coverage like everybody else. At first, I was like stunned, but now that I think about it, correct me if I'm wrong, Justin, but they didn't name the family members initially. 24 hours.
Right.
So they gave them their respect. I flipped the coin. Now I'm kind of like on the journalist's side. Kobe's family said, yes, it's okay. And yet at the same time, they also gave the respect of not naming the names of the other victims till they were identified for like 24 hours.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So thank you, Gwen. Yeah, you're right.
You're welcome.
I'm with you, too. I feel like I flipped from last night. Now, I think respect's a weird word. I'm not sure they cared. Now, I don't mean, you know, obviously I try to be as respectful as possible in saying that. But Harvey Levin is not concerned about the pilot's family, right? If it was a helicopter crash in Los Angeles and there were not celebrities on it, that's being left to somebody else to report on. TMZ, of course, cares about the celebrity. Let's go to the lines. 312 says, TMZ, the best at getting the news first and correct, better than most news networks. Most of the networks are just concerned about being first, getting it right is really just an afterthought now. And you're right, TMZ does get it right. We talked about it. I know they got a bad rap. I know their reputation is horrid because their TV show is brash. The lettering on their site's brash. Their stock and trade when they're not doing breaking news is a lot of bikini garbage. As I like to say, bikini garbage news. Who's in a bikini today? But they were right on Michael Jackson. They were right on Prince. They were the first to those stories. Whitney Houston, they're the first to Whitney Houston. 312 says, you're right. TMZ did nothing wrong. This is a different tone than last night. Again, we need to probably double source what Harvey Levin is saying because it was the New York Post that took Harvey Levin at his word. We haven't heard from Kobe Bryant's representatives. Dave says, I haven't heard one person from any of the other families speak on the matter, so why is everybody speaking on their behalf? It's a good point. And that was a great, Dave, that's exactly what I wanted to say last night, and I don't know if I articulated it. It was interesting how everyone is mad. And this story came from an L.A. County undersheriff, Tim Murakami, who tweeted out, it breaks my heart to try to notify the families to try and beat places like TMZ to the story. But you're right. We haven't heard from the Altobellis or the other victims' families from the crash that any of the press did anything wrong, and we just assumed that Kobe Bryant's family was not notified, but they were. They were actually in conversation. 630 says, first of all, it happens all the time with news. People do this. Let's take, for example, John F. Kennedy Jr. Who do you think the news people waited until Carolyn Bassett and her sisters beset? And her sister family was told that there was a plane crash. I guarantee you they didn't wait as soon as John F. Kennedy Jr. Yeah, I guess. 630's right, though. The second thing he says here, I'm sorry that I kind of garbled that text. It didn't, it's not very articulate. Nothing against you, 630. It's text. It's on me. More punctuation. But this is a great point. ABC News, all day during the tragedy, said that Kobe was with his whole family on the helicopter. They're not getting as much grief as TMZ. I saw tweets in all forms from all respected journalists saying inaccurate things right after they confirmed that it was Kobe Bryant. Kobe Bryant dies in helicopter crash, survived by his family. Well, he was with one of his family members and variations of that. 773 says, in 1968, my grandmother and her husband died in a fire on Lakeshore Drive. My mother was the next of kin. My father left for work at 6 a.m. and heard the news, including her name on the radio. Oh, that's terrible. It was very difficult for him to come back home and tell my mother. That's terrible. That's a terrible story. That's the story that makes us have this conversation today. I'm sorry that happened to your family. Let's go to Squat. Hey, Squat, how you doing?
Good, Jason. How are you?
I'm good. So, what do you think?
Well, you just stole my thunder or the previous texter. That's mm-hmm. the only issue I have. Now, TMZ, everybody's in a race for the first story, and they did nothing wrong, but the only thing I have a problem with is that when a family member hears this news right. and knows that his or her loved ones is all in playing. That's the only issue. See, I don't have a TV, or I'm on WGN all the time. So
right.
So I don't hear whoever, if they broke the story, they broke the story. But,
yeah, right.
And, you know, I don't know if they're getting unwanted heat that they don't deserve or what, but that's the only concern I have as a family right. member. You know, yeah. like you said.
I'm with you. Yeah, thanks, Squad. Appreciate it. Thanks for the call. Squad, a longtime texter, so great to hear your voice. All right, well, let's get to Vic Vaughn's news coming up here, and we'll get the show started. We got to talk about breaking news tonight. If you have a Facebook account and you live in the state of Illinois, Facebook could be paying you hundreds of dollars in the near future. I'm not exaggerating. You actually might get cash, cold, hard cash in the hundreds. Talk about that after Vic's news. 312-981-7200. Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight here on 720 WGN. If I sound a little bit slurry tonight, it's not the corona from the coronavirus. Kidding. I had a dental procedure today. And it was all it was a cracked filling. And it was causing some discomfort. And so they had to numb up the Novocaine to fix it. And it didn't take, so they did another one. They really got in there. And I have had a numb lip. Pete Zimmerman can attest to this. I've had a numb lip since I've been here. That procedure was at 11 o'clock this morning. It is now 8 o'clock, and I'm still like, so I apologize if it sounds like I'm on pain medication. I'm not. But it's just it's that moment right now where I'm starting to feel the lip come back, and that's always good for hosting a talk show. 312-981-7200. Coming up, Heather Sharone. We got to talk about this Facebook story that is breaking now. So this just came out. The Tribune just talked about this. They just posted a story in the 7 o'clock hour. I'm blown away. The breaking news, which could affect your pocketbook, Facebook could possibly be paying out hundreds of dollars to each of us who have accounts in the state of Illinois. What? Facebook is going to have to pay $550 million to Illinois users to settle allegations that its facial tagging feature violated our privacy rights. The settlement, which could amount to a couple of hundred dollars each, is part of the class action settlement. And it's up to a judge, essentially, to say, yes, it can go forward. That's amazing. Whoever this judge is, first off, nomination for the Supreme Court? Just saying. What an amazing story. So Facebook for years has been getting you to upload photos and trying to get you to interact on their site. And at the end of the day, their point was to get your data so they could sell it. And that has been a big part of the story of Facebook for the last couple of years as people started to recognize that's what they were doing. This class action settlement says you didn't tell us you were going to do that. This facial tagging, and you're using that information without our knowledge. That's a breach of our privacy. Judge agrees. $550 million settlement. And usually when you get a class action settlement, you get a 32-cent check. Thank you, AT&T. This would be a couple of hundred dollars to everybody on Facebook. So if you're listening right now and you didn't get in, you're like, I hate Facebook. I'm not on it. Well, I knew I was on it for a reason. At some point, I get $250. That's amazing. The store, but here's what I want to talk about tonight. Yesterday was Digital Privacy Day. This story comes out. It's all about how our privacy is being used. And you hear more and more governmental bodies, whether it be the state of Illinois, the city of Chicago, the federal government. We need to protect your data. Oh, hogwash. You don't need to protect your data. You need to pay me for my data. What I would like to see is a world in which our data becomes currency when we're born. We're born, you get 20,000 units, whatever you might call it, right? Let's just say it's some sort of currency. We can even do it in dollars. You get $1,000. And you can protect that $1,000. Or you can do whatever you'd like to do. You could cash it in and get the $1,000, and then Facebook, every time you put anything up or do anything, they have a right to it. They bought it from you. And if you want to protect it, you just hold on to it. And Facebook and other social media companies can't have it. It should be ours, and there should be a system in place in which we profit off of our own data. If I sell my blood, if I go do a research at the university to cut off my ear, I'm getting paid for it. I made the choice. I think it should be the same with our data. I think the data is an extension of us. And I'm sick and tired of both the social media companies, technology companies, and the governments acting as if it's not. That it's some sort of God-given right. I don't think it's a God-given right. I think it's an extension of us, and we can give it away if we choose to. 312-981-7200. What do you think of that idea? That we should be paid for our data. I'd be gladly give it away. That's what they're doing with Gen Z right now. All the video games that your kids play on the iPads, the video games that are on Switch, it's all, hey, if you give away your data, we'll give you something in return. We'll give you coins or whatever they're using. But we had a conversation about this not too long ago. We were talking to someone who's a bigwig in the esports, that's the future. That the younger generation is much savvier than us. They recognize that their data is worth something. Where we just kind of fumble around. Take our data. 312-981-7200. Am I onto something? Should we be paid for our data, for our privacy? I think so. I think it would be good. I don't necessarily need protection. I need cash. Let's go to John. John, what do you think? Am I onto something here?
Yes, absolutely. What's interesting is if you go to Andrew Yang's website,
he talks about this, right.
com,
he's running for president.
Absolutely 100% that platform on this, that we would own our data and have to be paid for it.
Yeah.
He's got a plan for that.
It's a great idea. I don't know much about whatever else Andrew Yang stands for, but he's right. And you don't hear politicians talking about it because this is all divide and conquer politics. They're going after specific issues that specific demographics care about. But what Andrew Yang is talking about is to a very young demographic, maybe a young voter at 18 years old who understands this. They're not being hoodwinked by Facebook. They know that their data is worth something. Why don't we? This settlement is essentially telling you your data is worth something. Now, I understand why the government doesn't necessarily want to change this up and say, yes, you're right, because they're also capitalizing off your data. But at some point or another, there has to be a reckoning with the social media companies and the tech giants to recognize Googles and the Facebooks and the Twitters and all those kind of things. That the arrangement that we created, that we have right now, is not working. And you can't continue to try and just pretend, pull the wool over our eyes and steal our identities. And I'm not talking about the dark web, and I'm not talking about identity theft. I'm talking about this technology that Facebook was using was essentially trying to get your image so they could sell it, so they could have it on file. They were trying to steal your image. And now a judge says your image is worth a couple hundred bucks. Okay, that's a start. I'll take it. 312 says, wow, thanks. $250 from Facebook. Road trip. My son's a sophomore in high school, and I saw an advertisement for Hillsdale College in Michigan, so I thought it'd be a good idea to fill information out with my son's name to get used to looking forward to college. After we filled out the information for the college, the last 2 weeks, he's gotten 20 college brochures. So whoever's getting the information for the college, Hillsdale, sold my kid's information to other entities that send out college brochures, then swipe my kid's privacy information. That's crazy. Thanks, Art. You're right. That should be an illegal practice. Or, better yet, it should be an agreed-upon practice. Instead of us having to pay to apply to something, or pay to have a premium service on any of these sites, they should be paying us. I should get $10 a month from Facebook. What if we reversed it? It's the great American cell phone swindle, says 630. We gave away our rights and privacy in return for a handheld computer. But why? We never made that distinction. I was offered a handheld computer. I pay for a handheld computer. Nowhere in the contract, and I know that you'll say, no, you didn't read the contract, and I didn't, but I'm paying money, especially for an iPhone 11. What do they want? $1,200? $1,200, $1,300 for an iPhone? And all of my privacy, all my data? No. How about free, and you can have my data? I would go, there you go, that's a perfect way. Give away the iPhone for nominal fee, or the service that is a cell phone provider that gives you, like AT&T, Verizon, or anything like that. And the cost is, you get my data. And the data, that right now, they're pocketing money from us for the technology, and then on top of it, selling our data. Again, I don't need protections from the government. I need cash. Change the way this is set up. Let's get into it. We're capitalists. This is a capitalistic society. Who's with me? Let's have a Bitcoin revolution without the Bitcoin. <laughs> 847 says, you're virtually quoting Andrew Yang. Good. I don't know much about Andrew Yang. I'm not an Andrew Yang supporter. I probably know more about the Saturday Night Live impressions of him than the actual one. But he's right. He's right. And at a certain point, he's not the only one. That, like I said, a couple months ago before this election even started, we're talking with executives in the esports community who said youngsters understand this. They realize their data costs and they're withholding it. Not because of privacy data. They know they're going to be on the web. They know that their data is worth something. They just want a return. 847 says, how about $1,000 a month? Yeah, they're talking about, what is it, the livable income? You hear some of the candidates to the far left talking about a livable income. What if we just had a livable income? Everybody got $10,000 and we went from there? Why don't you scrap all that and just start with something that you get a certain amount of money from these companies per year, per month, per week, whatever it might be, to access your data? I love it. Okay, we're all in favor. The court of Justin has, that's a gavel, but that's just my hand hitting the counter. Ow. 312-981-7200. We'll take a break here. Come back. Let's talk a little coronavirus. And coming up, Heather Sharone to debrief on the state of the state, so stay with us. Let's go to Ray. Ray's on the phone. Ray, I'm right, right?
Well, to an extent, yes. The problem that you run into is, you know, like a year and a half ago, there was a whole issue with some game on Facebook that people were signing up, and it wasn't just taking their information, it was taking all the friends' information, too.
The worst.
So by you selling your information, let's say I don't want mine sold,
yeah, that's gotta
but
be
you have my phone number in your phone, then all of a sudden now my information that I don't want sold is now sold.
We should figure out a system. This is just like the founding fathers. We got to figure out a system for our economy, our new economy. We need to bring that up, and we have to come up with a solution for that.
Yep.
Unbundling.
I agree.
Thanks, Ray. I love it. We need the Thomas Jefferson of data. Who's going to be the Thomas Jefferson of data? It's the biggest swindle. If you think about it, they knew this. That's what this judge is saying. They knew that data was the gold mine. Every time you see a commercial about Facebook or Twitter, we're trying to bring people together. We just love the world and a great place to communicate and bring people together. When behind the scenes, it's rich fat cats. There's my word again. The word of the week. Knowing that the new gold rush was data. And we need to find new tools to do so. Because every one of the dupes in all of the world, they're waiting to just give it to us. So how do we get it? We extract them with friend requests. And little goofy candy crushes. Art630, he said, you search for a product. Next thing you know, it's up on Facebook. The product, we all know that story. They're making money. Who's getting the money for that advertising? Facebook is. So Facebook is selling the fact that not only are you looking it up online, but you're talking about it in the room. And they're able to pinpoint and make money off of your situation. I think that's fine. I think if that's the world, the way the world's going to work, my data is not free. You skin the world. You created these companies in the guise that they were for the good of humanity, and you're watching it destroy. And not only that, you are stealing. It was just a big cover. That's what this judge is saying. It was just a big cover. You knew how much money was at stake and how much money you could make. And all you did was made products that are, I don't know, so we could amass as many friends and feel popular and not as alone. It had nothing to do with that. Nothing to do with those fancy, you know, glossy commercials that you see about love and coming together. And nothing to do with that. It just has to do with data being the new gold. It's no coincidence all these companies are in San Francisco. It's like the gold rush. I'm on to something. And let me tell you about those wrong numbered dialers. Getting real conspiracy theory-like on the show tonight. I like it, though. You're part of the Yang Gang and you don't even know it, says 847. All right. Okay. Anyway. But everything he says, this person, 847, says, you're part of the Yang Gang. Everything you're saying, including changing the economy, is his exact platform. Well, I'm glad. Maybe I'll vote for him. When we get to the meaningless primary that is Illinois, maybe I'll vote for him. You know, they have it set up. We can talk about that at some point as well. By the time they get to Illinois, this thing's going to be over. And do it every year. When is our primary? In March? Yeah, come on. They're going to be marching through New Hampshire and South Carolina. They'll have a swing. They'll have six or seven states, and we'll be down to, oh, is it Joe Biden or is it Joe Biden? Okay, I'm just Joe Biden. No good. 224 said they've been doing this for years. 60 years ago, when you signed up for a magazine, your name and address were sold, and they were reused. That's why you got different magazines. Okay, you're absolutely right. There's a history to this crookedness, to this blatant capitalistic corruption. The state of Illinois will find out, 779 says, don't worry, the state of Illinois will find out about the money Facebook's going to give us, and then they're going to tax the crap out of us. We're all going to get that 32 cents. That's so true. Way to circle right back around. So true. We have a Facebook settlement tax. What? Yes, it's $145. What? Really? Yes, we're going to use it because we want to fix the roads. Well, not the roads right now. The pensions? Maybe not the pensions. We want to buy a big boat. So we can all have merengue parties. All us lawmakers can have merengue parties down on Lake Michigan. down by Ohio Street Beach on our dime. I really am. I'm getting real saucy tonight. I think it was a loss to Michigan State, Northwestern. Not a good game. 312-981-7200 coming up. Heather Sherrone. We'll talk to her about the state of the state, which I just find fascinating. Don't you find fascinating that Rod Blagojevich, 11 years ago today, was removed from office as the governor of Illinois? 11 years ago today, on the same day, 11 years later, J.B. Pritzker is standing before the House of Representatives chamber saying we need to root out corruption. Hey, I thought we did. It's back. And it's not lost on me, the irony, that the guy who's telling us we need to root out corruption is on the Blagojevich tapes saying, oh, geez, that sounds good. Like, what's happening? It's like bell bottoms. What's old is new. We can have a whole conversation about Rob Blagojevich and whether or not you think he should still be in jail or not. That's not the topic tonight, but I'll take calls on it. But I'm more interested in the fact that here we go again with this conversation about rooting out corruption, about ethics reform. 11 years to the day when we impeached a governor for corruption and being unethical. Wow. Heather Sherrone coming up. Also, she's going to talk about the electric scooters. I thought we were done with that. If you live in Chicago or knew about this story, they had these electric scooters that were all over downtown or the West Loop and neighborhoods, and you could just pick it up on the sidewalk and turn it on and get hit by a car. But I was under the impression it was done. It was a failed experiment. Well, we're trying to experiment again. Going to tweak it. Heather's got the details coming up next here on 720 WGN. So stay with us. 312-981-7200. I think it's this weather. You heard Vic talking about it today and Bob Surratt. What are we talking about? A week now? 7 days of overcast? No sun? Also, there hasn't been a clear day, like a full clear sunny day in 2020. One of them? I think it was one. There was one. I remember I had a distinct memory of walking up the ramp to my high school and on the seventh or eighth day back from Christmas break and remembering everyone talking about that story that there hadn't been sun in a week or whatever. I just remember that in my head. It's stuck there. So I don't think that's abnormal. I know we're getting close to record-setting streak here, but it's not abnormal for this time of year to have no sun. That's why it's January. But maybe that's why I'm so saucy tonight. That's why I want to take on the whole system. I'm taking it on, but I'm not taking it on alone. Heather Sherrone from The Daily Line. She's the managing editor there. The Daily Line covers all things Chicago, Cook County, and Springfield. And they have a great newsletter that you get in your inbox every single morning. Heather, good morning. Good evening. How are you?
Well, I'm good. How are you? Saucy, apparently.
I really am. It's those electric scooters. All right, let's start with the state of the state. Today, the big ticket item, we thought it would be, you know, about tax and budgets, but it really was about ethics reform and corruption. Is that the right tone in Springfield right now? I mean, is everyone buying what the governor is talking about?
Well, I don't think the governor had much choice, because let's not forget that it was barely 24 hours before that former Senator Martin Sandoval pleaded guilty, right, to basically running interference for a company that we believe to be SafeSpeed that put up red light cameras all over the suburbs. So this is top of mind for a lot of legislators who, let's not forget, have to face the voters in about 6 weeks.
I right before we started the segment, right before the break, today is the 11th anniversary of when the state Senate, removed Governor Blagojevich from office. Say January 29th, whatever that was, 2009. It's amazing to think that 11 years later, the governor, a governor who was also on those tapes, a governor is talking about rooting out corruption in Springfield. I thought that was the idea, right? That's a decade ago. That we said, this is it, the end of corruption in Springfield, and yet it is still there. And is, why? Why does it continue?
Well, I think there are a couple of reasons, and I think the governor hit on at least one in his speech today, where he called for lobbying reform. Right now, there is very little requirement for lobbyists to register with the state and sort of disclose what they're doing and who's paying them and, you know, what's going on. So it makes it really hard for reporters like us to track what's happening. He also called for legislation, and I will tease tomorrow's Daily Line, where we'll have more details about this, about basically requiring legislators, if they leave their posts, to wait a certain amount of time before they become lobbyists. Mm. So that is what's sort of known in the political world as a cooling off period, which Illinois doesn't have, although a lot of other states do. And that is seen as a little bit of low hanging fruit that everybody can pretty much get behind and say, hey, look, we've done something. But you're not wrong. Corruption in Illinois and Chicago is certainly deeply entrenched. And the question this week really is, who's next? You know, who else was on tape with Martin Sandoval? Who else was on tape with former Alderman Danny Solis? What else is out there? You know, this was one shoe that dropped this week with Sandoval, you know, pleading guilty and saying he's going to help the feds and whatever else they're doing, which, of course, we're not entirely sure about.
Right.
But what else? What's next? And that's what will keep me up tonight and tomorrow night and the night after that.
When you talk to different lawmakers and people in Springfield, but also in Chicago, is that a big worry? Is it a worry about what Sandoval has and, frankly, what he's cooperating with the feds with?
Absolutely. Nobody knows. And nobody knows what else they're going to find, because once you have feds, you know, listening in on phone conversations and poking around, there's no telling where they're going to find, because, you know, let's go back to Blagojevich. You know, the federal investigators were listening in on the governor's phone calls and heard what they described as a scheme to sell a United States Senate seat, right? The former seat held by former President Barack Obama. And that's what triggered Blagojevich's arrest and the ultimate removal from office. But they, you know, they didn't think they were looking for that. So you never know what's underneath that rock once you pick it up.
The one thing about this, and you know, I do truly agree, and as you said it perfectly, it's low hanging fruit. I've been on my soapbox here on this program about lobbying reform, just because it's so weird to say you could be a Cook County commissioner and lobby the state or vice versa. That's so crazy. Okay, so fine, but that has nothing to do with the corruption that's at hand. That has nothing to do with Sandoval taking a bribe. That has nothing to do with Arroyo bribing another lawmaker.
Allegedly.
But, you know, it doesn't have anything to do with the fact that right now it just seems more, I don't know if it's because the feds have been supercharged because of the U.S. Attorney's Office, whatever it might be. It seems these are pretty straight up, I'm trying to find a way to screw over taxpayers. And I don't understand that. I would feel like that would be where you'd want to go with the angle, as opposed to talking about something that is also corrupt but has nothing to do with this.
Right. The question is, what is it going to take to sort of root out, like you said, that deeply entrenched corruption, where lawmakers see not only an opportunity, but feel unrestrained in asking for, you know, bribes? And if you listen to what, you know, in the plea agreement that Martin Sandoval said, you know, he was upfront about it. He said, you know, hey, do you have a baloney company that you can use to make these contributions to me?
Right, so like he knew how to do it, right.
Right. He knew how the game was played. So somebody taught him, and I assume that he taught other people. And the question is, when does that no longer become acceptable? Because let's not forget, Martin Sandoval was a major power player in Hispanic Democratic politics going back decades. So, you know, he learned from somebody, and you have to ask, you know, who has learned by him, and what is it going to take to say the costs of that behavior are just too high?
Hmm. It's all going to go back to Blagojevich. That's what we're going to find. No, I kid. All right, so what were the other takeaways from today? Obviously, corruption was front and center, but there's talk of early education and also the graduated tax plan, which really is going to be a big contentious part of the budget talks coming up here.
Right. So the question is, will it pass in November 2020? You know, I know it's super important that everybody's going to pick a new president or perhaps the same president in November, but Illinois will decide whether to change the Constitution to allow a graduated income tax or a flat income tax. So that money wouldn't kick in until the second half of the fiscal year. So lawmakers are going to have to decide how they're going to budget with that potential influx out there. And that is going to make this budget season a little bit more difficult than it has been in the past. And let's cast our memories back a whole year ago. That was going to be a tough budget fight, too, when all of a sudden this the state found it had an extra $1.5 billion in its coffers. And that, you know, made everything a lot easier. Nobody expects that to happen again. There are going to be some tough decisions to be made. The other thing the governor talked about today, which connects back to the whole corruption things, was that he said he was looking for legislation that addressed energy policy and that made progress in fighting climate change. And he said explicitly that he would not sign a bill that was written by the energy companies. Mm-hmm. And if you've been playing along at home, you know that that was a shot at ComEd, which is has been named in some of these search warrants that have been served at the Capitol and in Chicago and the surrounding towns. So that's very much a part of it as well. And there's a bill that didn't make it through last time around that people are going to really push this time around, the Clean Energy Jobs Act. That's really designed to get Illinois to fully renewable sources of energy quicker than current policy calls for. Mm.
Heather Sharon on the line with me. She's the managing editor at the Daily Line at dailyline.net. Covers Chicago, Cook County, Springfield, all the places that make news, of course. Let's do this. Let's stay on Springfield for just a second, and then we'll move on, because I want to talk about some things that are local, including the scooters. And I got you for the half hour. But, you know, when we think about Springfield, the one thing we heard yesterday, we're having a conversation about previewing, is that the budget hole, not unlike Chicago, balloons again. So coming up here, there's a huge hole that needs to be filled. And this Chicago has the same issue. And I know that Mayor Lightfoot needs to go down in this session and try to get money for herself and the city. So how, with that budget hole, with the state budget hole, it doesn't seem like there's too many holes. Like how is everyone going to go down there and find all the money that they're looking for?
That's a really good question, which is why you're going to see so much emphasis on the graduated income tax fight. So essentially, the governor is going to say again this year when he introduces the budget what he said last year, which was basically, look, this is a bridge budget. We need to get to the graduated income tax to really sort of address this structural imbalance. Until we get that passed, it's simply not feasible. And he said much the same today, that the state's fiscal problems are so deep that without this sort of structural big reform, it's going to be nearly impossible, he says, to address. Now, of course, it's in his best interest to say, look, it's an emergency. We got to do this. This, you know, you can't vote no against this. But he's running into some really stiff headwinds from the Republicans in Illinois who are united in opposition to this and who will point to all of those corruption investigations and say, why on earth would we as voters vote to give Springfield politicians more of our money when we have seen clear and convincing evidence that they are not being good stewards of the public trust? That doesn't make, you know, right. The Republicans are going to say that doesn't make any sense. And that is going to complicate the governor's push to get that passed. In a couple of months. Yeah.
Heather Sharon, the managing editor at the Daily Line, joins us here on Wednesdays. We're talking about what happened with the state of the state today in Springfield. We come back, let's talk about some local stories, including three stories I think that are interesting. The electric scooters coming back, it's interesting. The Obama Center fight, which you heard the mayor today say that the last administration, the Emanuel administration, just let the Obama folks have whatever they wanted. It was a culture of whatever you want. We'll talk about if that is hindering the project now. And then also, we talked a little bit about Facebook and facial recognition and how we're all going to get a couple hundred bucks back thanks to a settlement. But the police are using similar stuff in a database, and they've been told not to use it, and looks like they're not going to. But we'll talk to Heather about what that means for law enforcement and whether or not they'll continue to do facial recognition on their own. It's Heather Sharon. It's Justin Kaufman. It's 720 WGN. Stay with us. Heather Sharon with us. Daily Line covers all things Chicago, Springfield, Cook County. And we're talking about some of the things that happened today, including the state of the state. But let's move on to some of the things that happened in Chicago. The electric scooters program. This is a program that we thought was a one-off. I thought I read that it wasn't successful, but we're bringing it back for another summer.
We are, at least another pilot, and I gotta say, I really regret not putting this headline on the story, Return of the Scooters, Electric Boogaloo. I missed that opportunity. Really do that. So essentially, the first pilot was had good things and it had bad things, and there wasn't enough for the city to decide whether they should bring it back full-time or allow scooters in certain parts of the city on a permanent basis, or at least in the warmer months, because nobody wants to be on a scooter in weather like this. But a lot of the concerns had to do with whether it was actually supplementing public transportation, if it was reducing ride-hailing vehicles, which is something that Mayor Lori Lightfoot is very committed to. And it wasn't clear whether it was equitable. The pilot program took place on the west and the northwest side, but most of the trips were along the blue line in neighborhoods like Logan Square. And it's not really clear if scooters would be successful elsewhere in the city. So there's more work to do, and it's not clear exactly what the pilot program will look like again this summer, whether it will be 10 companies like it was the first time around, or whether more companies will be allowed to participate, and what part of town it will be. So there's a lot of things we don't know. But scooter advocates were certainly hoping that the city was going to embrace these scooters, and it was going to be something that would revolutionize Chicago public transportation.
Well, and it's done in other cities, mostly warm weather cities. California does this, and there are others that do it as well. So it's not foreign in the way that people know that how it works. Just the question is, does it work in Chicago? It's a big city, and it's tough to get from neighborhood to neighborhood, as was the one time that I decided, you know what, I'll take this from the West Loop to West Town, and found myself, you know, cruising on Ashland at rush hours. Like, this is probably not the safest thing in the world.
You're saying you're lucky to still be alive after your interactions with the scooters. And I think that's the problem. And there's really a question of whether this is an amenity, whether this is something that people would like to have, or whether it's an actual transportation solution to the problems that Chicago is facing in all sorts of neighborhoods. And really the big question is, would these scooters make sense in a neighborhood like Lakeview or downtown or along the riverfront? And at least for right now, I would say that's unlikely, because if there were these many problems and just mixed results in this limited area with this limited amount of scooters, I think we're probably pretty far away from the city saying, we live in a grand scooter-friendly city.
I want to backtrack just a second, because I had a couple of texts that came in about what we were talking about in Springfield. And I'll let Kathy be the spokesperson for three or four of the texts that came in. When pertaining to the Sandoval bribe, is something going to happen to the company that offered Sandoval the bribe? Is there something on the hook for the red light camera industry, or whoever it was? I mean, do we know if they will be punished as well for the bribe?
We don't know, and we reached out to Safe Speed yesterday when Martin Sandoval named them during the hearing, although he sort of corrected himself and referred to them as Company A, which is how they're referred to in the court filings. But it is certainly illegal to bribe legislators, and the company said that if there was a bribe offered, it was done without the company's knowledge policy, and they would never do that. So if there were charges to be filed against the company, the government would have to prove that this was company policy and that everybody, you know, was in the loop about the quid pro quo, to bring over a phrase much in use.
So, Kathy, what that means is rogue agent, right? That's what they're going to say, rogue. All right, so back to Chicago. This the facial recognition story tonight that's breaking has to do with Facebook. A settlement that came out says that Facebook owes hundreds of dollars to every Illinois account based on using facial tagging tool or technology. But in Chicago, the CPD uses facial recognition tools. The privacy advocacy groups are crying foul, because they're like, this is a really dumb idea. You're going to get sued. Stop doing it. Where are we?
We're basically with people realizing that the Chicago Police Department is using this technology, which was really exposed in a New York Times report. It's called Clearview AI, and essentially what it does is that it scrapes photos from Facebook and Twitter and all over the internet and allows the police department to access all of those photos and then to use that facial recognition software to figure out where else you have been. So, for example, if they think that perhaps I robbed a liquor store, they could try to find, they could use this to input my picture into the system, and that it would essentially search all of the pictures of me on the internet and compare it to the videotape they have of the crime in progress. And then they could say, aha, we have a match. And so they could take that to a judge and go. Now, the Sun-Times reported that this technology had not been used yet in a case that had gone all the way through the court system. So it's very much an open question whether Illinois courts would rely on this evidence. But what I found interesting was that this is a brand new contract inked just this month, apparently. And it was not something that had to go through the city council to get alderman approval. And I would be shocked. I've got my crystal ball out here, so I'm in dangerous territory. But this seems like something aldermen would be interested in holding hearings about, because I know I was shocked, and I imagine that other people were shocked as well. And all credit to the Sun-Times for breaking the story.
Yeah, and I have to say, even tonight, that Facebook is you know, pay out $500 million. And that means that we're all going to get some cash for them, essentially a judge saying that they broke our, or, you know, sort of, well, I don't know what you call it, used our data without our permission.
Right.
I wonder if aldermen feel that way about this, meaning there will be a lawsuit, and lawsuit will go out, a judge will say, yeah, you can't do that, that's a $500 million thing, and it's the city of Chicago and the Chicago Police Department that is paying out to taxpayers because they used this tool that they didn't properly vet.
That's always a question, especially for a police department that is under a federal consent decree that has been sort of told by the Department of Justice, hey, you need to change the way how you police to comply with the Constitution. This opens up a lot of questions, and the Sun-Times spoke to the ACLU, which has been a very, you know, vigorous critic of the department, saying that this is unacceptable on every level.
Heather Sharone, my guest, managing editor over at the Daily Line, joins us on Wednesday. We're talking a lot of topics tonight. And her last one, the Obama Center. We can't even call it the library anymore, but the Obama Center is starting to heat up because there are some questions about affordable housing around the area, to obviously continuing questions about its relationship with the neighborhood. But Mayor Lightfoot today saying that they really need to take a look at this, and took a shot at the Emanuel administration, saying, you know, it used to be a relationship, or the relationship the administration had with the Obama Center was do whatever you want. And I wonder, I mean, you think about all the players and the names they're associated. Obviously, there are friendships there and relationships. But is that going to be a problem moving forward? Does the mayor support the Obama Center? And is there a chance that a new administration would look at the relationship differently?
Well, there's always the possibility, but the mayor has been very clear that she sees the Obama Center as a boon for Jackson Park, a boon for the South Side, a boon for Chicago as a whole. It's really a jewel in Chicago's crown. However, there are still a lot of issues about the Obama Center that is not clear on how it's going to be resolved. One is affordable housing. There is a proposal that could be turned into an ordinance later this month or later next month that would sort of try to protect the residents who live around the center from being displaced by increasing affordable housing requirements. It's not clear if that's going to be sufficient for the local alderman, Jeanette Taylor, and the coalition that have been working on this really for years. The other issue is that Jackson Park is a federally protected national landmark. So the federal government has to sign off on these plans before the first shovel of dirt can be moved. And they have yet to do that. And in fact, they found that the center will have an adverse impact not only on the park itself, but also the boulevards that surround the park. And the boulevards are also a protected national landmark. So the Obama people are going to have to come back with revised plans to sort of address that impact in some way. The city will get a chance to review those plans and weigh in on them. And then ultimately, the federal government will have to sign off on them. That could potentially mean that it would have to go back to the city council. And if that were to happen, then you're sort of back at ground zero or square one, so to speak, because then you can have aldermen and would get a chance to say, well, I'm not going to vote for this unless there's some sort of protection for, you know, these residents who have lived in these neighborhoods and that are now sort of finding themselves being priced out of the neighborhood because you've got sort of, you know, a huge amount of real estate speculation because everybody thinks this is going to be the next hot Chicago neighborhood. So, you know, if you talk to the Obama Foundation people, they say, oh, it's a done deal. We're fine. We're moving ahead. But whenever you get a federal review process involved, you don't know how long it's going to take. You don't know what the ultimate decision is going to be. And, you know, it, for at least the next year or so, it's the Trump administration, at least.
Yeah.
And, you know, the president has certainly made it clear that he is not afraid to take a shot at his predecessor, something he apparently shares with Mayor Lightfoot.
That's a great way to wrap it up. That's why I laugh. Everyone has questioned many of the current administration's moves to essentially undo the Obama legacy. This is literally the Obama legacy. It's the Obama library.
Correct.
If they had a way to stop it, I feel like they would. Heather Sharone joins us every Wednesday night to talk about Chicago, Cook County, Springfield politics. And tonight was no different. She's the managing editor at Daily Line, which you can find their newsletter, which is awesome. Gets in your inbox in the morning and all their stuff at dailyline.net. Heather, thanks so much.
Happy to be here. Thanks, Justin.
All right. There you go. Don't get me started on the Obama Center. And the idea of that, first of all, if that happened, could you imagine? Because there's always been fair game for the libraries. When a presidential library is set up, it's usually after the fact. That's a common courtesy. Could you imagine how the Trump administration went in and said, well, we'll mess with this library. Literally messing with his legacy. Literally. I will say this, though. I'm on the record, and I've talked about this, and I don't want to be a hypocrite or be inconsistent. I don't like when we take parkland, whether it be federal or whether it be Chicago parkland, and use it for commercial gain. In this case, I know the foundation is not for profit, but at the end of the day, and I have nothing with the, it looks awesome, the renderings look awesome, but that's Jackson Park. And it makes me a little bit concerned that we're taking parkland, especially in a time when we need all the parkland, we need all the trees we can get. And we're giving it away to a center that, of course, like I said, I have no problem with the center or the foundation. Just there's a lot, seems like there's a lot of empty land in several different areas of Chicago, abandoned properties and factories that have moved out that would be better suited for a big, huge project like that than the park that we have on the south side of Chicago. That's just my thought. And I'm on record. I said that about the museum, the Star Wars, the Chewbacca Museum, they were going to put over by Soldier Field. I hated that. And the lawsuits have gone through. I think there's still one pending, but the lawsuits have gone through, and most of the judges, probably appointed by Obama, said threw the stuff out. So there isn't really a challenge like there was with the Lucas Museum. I think there's one pending still. So it's interesting. We can have that debate. I'll debate that all night. That's so much fun to talk about because I agree that we need to protect that land. And I don't think we should be building on it anything because pretty soon it's going to be like the Warren G. Harden Taco Bell Museum that is on that land. 312-981-7200. Coming up, let's talk about Northern Illinois University. They're getting rid of standardized tests. That means no ACT, no SAT to get into college. Will they be the first? Will they be the last? We'll find out coming up here right after Vic's News on 720 WGN. 312-981-7200. Justin Kaufman with you here on 720 WGN. With you till 11 o'clock. Coming up next hour, Greg Flamm will be here for the swap meet. It's been a couple weeks. He was out last week. He had the flu. Hope he's okay. Hope he's not bringing that Heineken virus in here. He's going to have to do the tell us what our memorabilia is worth into his sleeve. That's coming up at 10 o'clock. Great to have Greg back. 312-981-7200. Before we get to this great story about NIU eliminating standardized tests as part of their admission protocol, which is a huge story just happening today. Huge. I got a good story that's also trending right now about the most popular Super Bowl recipes for every state. Now, this is usually they'll put out, right? And it's not that big of a deal. Usually you look at it and you're like, oh, well, okay. So let me guess. Idaho, it's potatoes, right? Chili is a big one. Michigan is chili. Wisconsin is chili. But the problem here, it's America's Super Bowl recipes. It's a Google Trends story. It's unique searched Super Bowl recipes by state over the past week. For the state of Illinois, the number one search, Philly cheesesteak. What? Is that a typo? What do you mean Philly cheesesteak? There's nobody putting Philly cheesesteak into the Google machine. That's ridiculous. Philly cheesesteak is the number one searched recipe on Google for the state of Illinois. I find that to be hard to believe. 312-981-7200. What are you planning on eating on Sunday? What are you planning on making? Is it a Philly cheesesteak? I just get the lines light up and they're like, Philly cheesesteak. No, I looked it up. It's a great Philly cheesesteak. Because you'll have, and it's fun to look at the map here of all the states. Like I said, a lot of chilies. A ton of chilies. But the state of New Hampshire, chicken breast tender. What is that? What? A lot of buffalo chicken dips. My favorite by far, Georgia. Ham, bologna, turkey sub. What? There's a couple of generics. Indiana's generic is just chicken. I don't know what that is. Iowa, stromboli. It's a strange thing to be searching for unique. Now, again, these are unique searches for Super Bowl recipes. So they put in Philly cheesesteak, and then a bunch of recipes pop up. Kind of like I do with my crock pot. Chicken noodle soup. Crock pot. North Dakota likes pizza sauce. South Dakota likes marinara sauce. I think this is... I'm having a hard time with the states. I'm like the NPR reporter. Can't find Ukraine on the map. I'm doing the same thing here. I'm like, is that Wyoming or is that Colorado? I think it's Colorado. Colorado, I think, says ground beef. And Nebraska says cream cheese jalapeno hamburger. I want to go there. Now I'm interested. I'm intrigued in that, right? Who in their right mind is searching Philly cheesesteak for the state of Illinois? I don't know. I mean, I mean, the whole state of California, it's fried rice. Arizona is green chicken enchilada. Alaska is dill pickle with beef dip, whatever that is. But for Illinois, again, Philly cheesesteak. Do they mean Italian beef? Does the Google machine take Italian beef and go, beep, boop, 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 they mean Philly cheesesteak? What are you going to make? 312-981-7200. Is it Philly cheesesteak? I'm going to be with my son on Super Bowl Sunday. My wife is going out of town, and I realized that I'm now in charge of all of the accoutrements, the appetizers, everything that goes in. So maybe we get an idea here. But I don't think it's going to be a Philly cheesesteak, because that's an abomination, right? Are people really in Illinois? Because this is an Italian beef town. This is an Italian beef state. If you're going to make a Philly cheesesteak, you just make an Italian beef. There's no Philly cheesesteaks in Chicago. There's maybe the one place that's called Philly cheesesteaks, and I don't know. I still like the idea. Maybe I'll go to Iowa just for the stromboli. Kentucky, it's fondue. It's an interesting one. And West Virginia, you got pork carnita tacos. So strange, so unique. Makes me think that there's not a lot of searches. Philly cheesesteak. No, Ohio is Philly cheesesteak. I can kind of get that because they're close to Philadelphia and they're Philly. And actually, Pennsylvania is all chili. I just don't get the idea that why Philly cheesesteak? Nobody is searching or eating Philly cheesesteaks in Chicago. Give me a break. I'm getting a lot of... 630 says, sorry, I just searched Philly cheesesteak last weekend. You're right, Ryan. Ryan from Mount Prospect. That's hilarious. So maybe they're right. Mike says there's a great Philly cheese off of Monty's on Lawrence west of Western. I'm sure. There's no doubt that there's probably some great Philly cheesesteaks. But that's not what people are eating in the Illinois area. Right? Let's go Sam. Sam, what are you going to eat on Super Bowl Sunday?
And we are having gumbo, boiled crawfish, and Frito pies.
So my guess is you live in Wheaton?
I live in Louisiana.
Oh, there you go. Right. Please.
Yeah, I was just, matter of fact, I was just down the heading down the interstate and was searching around on the radio and heard you guys, and glad I did. I'm enjoying the show.
Where are you at right now?
I am between New Orleans and Baton Rouge.
Wow, that's amazing. It's amazing how radio works at night, isn't it?
It is. It's kind of crazy that I could pick you up, but I'm glad I did.
Thanks,
I'll actually just program you in so that anytime I get the chance, if I'm on it, if I'm driving at night, I'll see if I can get you.
I love it. I love it. Thanks a lot, Sam. Appreciate it.
Now, are you familiar with Frito Pie? Do you
have Frito
Pies in Illinois?
They do have Frito Pies in Illinois. That's and you'll get them most at the barbecue joints. So you can find the, and they do the walking taco, which is similar to the Frito Pie. But yeah, they have them. But it's not, I would say, though, it's probably not as prevalent as it is in Louisiana. But we do have it.
It's definitely ball game fare down in Louisiana, Texas. Definitely, you know, going to a ball game is Frito Pie. And I know you don't have boiled crawfish, but, I come to Chicago. Okay, I come up to Chicago. Okay, is that where y'all were out of Chicago?
Yep, Chicago.
All right, I come to Chicago occasionally. I'll have to bring boiled crawfish for you.
Bring it, and don't look for the Philly cheesesteak because that's not here.
You know, I'm not going to. I'm definitely, if I'm coming to Chicago, I'm eating steak. I'm eating some deep dish pizza.
Right, there you go.
Maybe some hot dogs.
Yeah,
but
get the hot dog.
I'm not going Philly cheesesteak.
Avoid the. Thanks a lot, Sam. Avoid the deep dish pizza, and but go with the Chicago hot dog. That's what I would do. 312-981-7200. 630 says, I'm sorry, but who the blank does fondue? Kentucky does, apparently. I'm getting a lot of people who are challenging me on the Philly cheesesteak. Mike says, we're eating Philly cheesesteaks here right now and on Super Bowl Sunday. What? Although 630 Art says, there's no such thing as a good Philly cheesesteak. They use Cheese Whiz with chopped up roast beef. Why in God's good name would you want that? Although 312 says a good Philly cheesecake is Clark Dog. Yeah, the Clark Dog has been around for a long time ago, right? 630 also says people in Illinois think barbecue is pulled pork. Barbecue is brisket. So this Sunday it's going to be brisket and prime rib cut real thin. That's my Super Bowl. Oh, I like that. 312-981-7200. How about it for Sam, everybody? How great is it? Listening down in Louisiana on the interstate, picking up WGN on a clear, crystal night, although it's overcast here. That's the power of AM radio at night. All right, we'll take a quick break. Come back, stay on this topic, but I also want to talk about NIU because I think it's a huge story about getting rid of standardized tests. No more ACTs or SATs to get into NIU starting 2021. We'll take a quick break. But again, tell me what you're going to eat, and don't tell me it's Philly cheesesteak. Stay with us. Justin Kaufman with you. People texting in about what they're going to eat. Also the audacity that the unique search. Google Trends put out a thing today about the unique searches for American Super Bowl recipes. And the number one search in the state of Illinois is Philly cheesesteak. I find that hard to believe. It's a head scratcher. 847 says you find it hard to believe because you're condescending and judgmental. Come on, man. I'm a Chicago guy. I don't think that Philly cheesesteaks is a Chicago thing. It's a Philadelphia thing. We have a version. It's the Italian beef. I don't think I'm being condescending about it. You can enjoy it. I don't have a problem with you enjoying it. I'm just surprised. I feel Google's wrong. Maybe people are interested in the Philly cheesesteak. It would make sense maybe if the Eagles were playing in the Super Bowl and you wanted to cheer them on by eating that food. But the Philly's got their cheesesteaks. We have Italian beef, right? Am I wrong on this? 312-981-7200. Am I being condescending and judgmental to people's food choices? I don't know about that. I don't know. I think I'm right. This is an Italian beef town. There are Philly cheesesteaks, and they'll be everywhere, but I just think it's interesting that in Chicago, a food named after a different city is the number one recipe searched on Google. I don't buy it. Some others, Kansas, the number one unique search is calzone. Wow, I could see that. There are way too many states. Okay, Utah, North Carolina, Tennessee, and a couple others that are jalapeno poppers. And people are going crazy for jalapeno poppers in those states. And then there's a ton about the buffalo chicken dip, which I think would make that makes sense, right? The one that's kind of the most interesting to me is Mississippi. Mississippi is green beans with beef broth. How about that? It's very specific. Susie's on Montrose. Best Philly cheesesteaks. That's what 708 says. On garlic bread. Oh, that's, oh my gosh, that's so good. 630 says, had a cheesesteak yesterday at Penn Station Lombard. It's great stuff. Stop food shaming, says 773. Sorry about that. Let's go to Tom. Tom, what do you think? Am I wrong? I mean, we're talking about Philly cheesesteaks in Chicago.
Yeah, I went to Geno's in Philadelphia, and I still don't understand it. It's just like Steak'em with Cheese Whiz on top of Steak'em.
I get it if you grew up with it, right? What do you have? What are you having on Super Bowl?
Yeah, so this is going to be a shocker. We did a vote because we're going to have 20 people over, and my girlfriend said, all right, why don't we just let's take a vote, see what everyone wants to eat. And out of nowhere, the vote comes back that they want to have Chinese food.
Whoa. Yeah, you wouldn't think that at all.
So now I'm not even going to my own Super Bowl party. I'm going to find a different one.
I bet you I got good teriyaki wings, man. Think about that, right? Thanks, Tom. I don't know. I love Chinese food, right? That is a weird choice for the Super Bowl, but I get it in the sense that maybe it's a communal. You got 20 people. You got the lazy Susan. Put it right in the middle. Let it spin around. 312-981-7200, the phone number. And I apologize for coming across as a food shamer. That wasn't the intent of the segment. The intent was to say that I find it particularly confusing that the number one searched recipe in the state of Illinois, according to Google, for the Super Bowl in last week is Philly cheesesteak. I guess I'd be less confused. Maybe I'd be more confused if it was Chinese food. That would be pretty funny. I also like that there's probably 15 states, everything from Massachusetts to Minnesota to Texas, it's just chili. Oklahoma likes French onion cream dip. That's a good one. That would make sense. You want to make that at home? You want to make that for the Super Bowl? It totally makes sense to me. The same, I guess, chicken wings, because you got chicken wings everywhere. In Wyoming, it's baked chicken wings. In Maine, it's just chicken wing. This is like you're going by the search. Montana is bacon shrimp. Again, it feels like they just picked one person Googling and use that for this survey, because I can't fathom that there are thousands of people all going, I don't know, bacon shrimp. It seems like this is more of a composite study than or trend as opposed to thousands and thousands of people by state, and that would make sense for Philly cheesesteak, right? 312-981-7200. I like it. We'll see what happens. I don't know what. Maybe I'll do Chinese food. Maybe that'll be the way to go. All right, there's a story I want to talk about. This week is a good week to talk about this because I would assume many parents around this area are up to their eyeballs and getting prepared for standardized testing with their kids that are in high school and they're getting ready to take the ACT or the SAT. I think they finally started to do away with the ACT in this area, but remember when we all had to take the ACT and everyone else in the country was an SAT? But this is an amazing story, and I think one that hopefully will be the start of a trend. So NIU, Northern Illinois University, will become the first public institution in the state to be, quote, test blind, removing the use of standardized test scores for general admission and merit scholarship decisions, beginning with the 2021 application. So any high school graduate who applies to NIU with a cumulative GPA of 3.0 or above will be guaranteed admission. What? All freshman applicants will be automatically considered for NIU merit scholarships based on their GPA and their GPA only. This also includes the University Honors Program. They will no longer be required to submit standardized test scores. NIU says this comes from their deep commitment to making a college education both accessible and equitable for a broad and diverse student population, while reflecting the university's efforts to eliminate unnecessary and biased barriers through a student's educational path campus-wide. All right. I feel bad for people going through for 2020. There are a lot of concerns about this, and I like it. I like it on the... Who doesn't, right? But I would assume the people who you pay to tutor your kids for the standardized test don't like it. I'm sure there are a lot of cottage industries around testing that don't like it. 312-981-7200. If you're going through the process, or you did, you had a high school kid who went through it, tell us about it. Does this news sway you in one way or the other? Are you happy? Are you mad because you went through it with your kids and now other people don't have to? Does it denigrate or diminish what you accomplish in high school and what it takes to get into college? Let's have that conversation. 312-981-7200. You're on 720 WGN. We're talking about NIU, who said today that they are discontinuing standardized tests as admissions. So if you take the ACT or the SAT, it doesn't matter anymore at NIU. They're the first institution, public institution in the state of Illinois to get rid of testing as a guideline to get into school. It's a fascinating conversation. I'm getting a lot of texts from teachers and others to say it's the greatest thing that's ever happened. Let's go to Brian. Brian, what do you think of this decision by NIU Northern?
I think it's great. I think my son is, he never did well on those tests.
Mm-hmm.
And he went to UCSD San Diego, majored in biochemistry, straight A's, and then got accepted into, now he's at UC Berkeley, going for his PhD.
Hmm. Wow.
And he never did well on those.
Right.
No, we took him to Huntington Learning Center. He took it three different times and got the same score every time.
Yeah, that's the point, right? That's what they do. So, all right, awesome. Thanks, Brian. Thanks for the call. That's a great point. David, you say don't get rid of them. Why shouldn't we get rid of them?
Well, I don't think we should get rid of them because they're a way to get rid of bias in grading by high school teachers. If somebody is liked by a teacher, they may get an A or a B when they really didn't deserve it. The standardized test tends to get rid of that bias. You take a test that millions of other people are taking the same way they take it, and if you perform well, then your chances of performing well in college are pretty good.
Yeah, right. That's a great point. That is a great point. That is the argument against it. You nailed it right on the head. Thank you, David.
You're welcome.
He's right. What do you do to get rid of any sort of bias, any sort of human bias? I mean, in my case, I would say it's the other way around. I remember that I didn't do so well in high school. Don't tell the people who are asking me to come back and speak at the school. But I did well on the standardized test. And it was the standardized test score that inevitably got me into all the state schools. It was the other way around. I would not have been able to get in just on my grades alone. I don't think I had a 2.7 or something like that at McHenry. So, but 312-981-7200, this is a great conversation. NIU, the first to say, you know what? We're just discontinuing the whole idea. I don't know, 312. Let's see, as a teacher, 815 says, as a teacher, I love it. It's disconcerting to watch students take these tests over and over again, paying hundreds of dollars on tutors, knowing that other extremely worthy students can't even afford this charade. That is such a good point. At some point or another, this whole concept got, I don't even know what you call it, co-opted by tutors and for-profit education centers that charge an arm and a leg to you and your family to promise as much as they can to help your kid get a better grade on these standardized tests. And the whole point is that will help them get into college. And then you find yourself struggling when the grade that you wanted doesn't come in. And you have to do it again and again and again. You take the test. It's a lot of money. I'd love to talk to someone who's going through it right now, because I'm kind of going through it right now. We're in seventh grade in CPS, and that's the whole idea. We have to think about tutors, and we have to make sure that the state standardized test, the I think they call it the NWEA, that my son has to do well on it. And that's a great point that is brought up by our caller saying you can't get rid of it because what if my son is just charming to the teachers and they're like, let's just give him all A's. It's not, but that's the idea. And then this is sort of the equalizer. The standardized test keeps that relationship, that human bias out of the equation. And 815 says, there's no research that supports the idea that doing well on standardized tests predicts success in college. I absolutely agree with that. I think it's different for everybody. So I wholeheartedly agree with that sentiment. But yeah, we're getting a lot of great texts. 630 says, I think it's great what NIU is doing. They're not taking standardized tests anymore. So many people don't test well. I think it should be recommended by employers or teachers. Well, that's a good idea. It's good, Kathleen. Kathleen, you're on the line. How are you? You're on the air.
Oh, well, thank you. Yes, I took the test the first day year that they were available for free.
That's
great. Yes, and if my family had to pay for them, I would not have been able to take the test, and I scored in the 98th percentile rank.
Oh, congratulations. Do you feel like it helped you? Do you feel like when you got in that percentile, did that change your trajectory when it came to what you were going to do for college?
Eventually, when I decided to go to college, yes, it did. I got into the nursing college in NIU based on that percentile rank, okay. But I didn't have to pay for it.
Yeah, right. That's where we're at now, where everyone's got to pay for tutors and things like that. Kathleen, thanks for the call.
Okay.
All right. 773 says, someone brought up bias before. Well, sorry, but ACT and the SAT test, they're incredibly biased. We get a better look at students' aptitude by several classes over 4 years, therefore balancing out a possible bias with one or two teachers, as opposed to a one-time test that has many biases in this. I've heard this before. Not to mention class and socioeconomic issues. They don't teach to the test. A lot of times you'll get this, and this happens a lot, where they may try to teach a test, but in this case, no different than what happens at CPS when kids try to test into selective enrollment. A lot of times it's people who are well off and they have the means to get a tutor or to go to the center or to get the right people. Not that far off from what happened with the cheating scandals and the Lori Loughlins and the others. They went a little too far on that regard, you know, into criminal. But in this case, if you have the means, you have an upper hand. That's bias. You're already able to get your kid better tutoring or better teaching to get them ready for these classes or for the standardized test. And therefore, you have a better chance of getting into the school as opposed to someone whose family can't afford that. So they're being punished for that. I dig this topic. A lot of different opinions coming in. 847s, all my kids are done with college, but I had to pay a lot for tutoring and etc. Kind of not fair. I think these kids need something to make a challenge to get in. It can't just be they did well in school. That's a good point. 224 says, my son first got a 15 and was told to consider other options. We spent the money and the time with tutors. The next test, he got a 28. Wow. He got into Bradley, graduated with honors as an electrical engineer. So much for a 15, huh? They should get rid of these stupid tests and see what a kid does outside of the test. That's a sentiment. That's what we're talking. I think that's what NIU is trying to say. And this, you know, there are some other schools, private schools, that don't care about your SAT or ACT. Columbia College in Chicago is an open enrollment. They're not interested in your grade point average or your ACT or SAT. They just want to make sure you pay for it. That's what it comes down to. But at least they're upfront about it, right? It is interesting. I wonder if other state colleges will follow suit. Obviously, it's a huge prestige issue. We haven't even talked about prestige or any other issues including to that. I mean, U of I is not going to take that away because then they can't be like, oh, you need to get a 25 or up, and we're 25 and up school, or whatever the new ranking is. But I like this with NIU. 312-981-7200. If your kid is going through it, what I want to hear from someone who's going through it, I want to hear the struggle it is to have to schedule it, to pay for it, to make sure that they're doing what they have to do. That's so much stress. In that regard, I think NIU is right. And then also, I think the caller's right on the other side. Hey, there's a lot of bias that goes into grades. One thing that's not biased, and although that has been debunked on some of the texts, but one thing that's not biased is a standardized test that we all take. You can say that there's bias in how we prepare for that test, but it's a test that everybody takes the same way. So is that enough? That should be the standard. That's the idea, standardized test, to get you into college. Not whether or not you got straight A's in a school that may be more lenient or casual with straight A's than a more stringent school that has a different grading system. And that happens, right? I can only think teacher to teacher. Right? Some teachers are like, I like the way you think. A. Never happened to me. I just, that's the dream scenario. You know what, Kaufman? You didn't do the work, and you didn't do the homework, and you did poorly on the test, but I like some of the things you're bringing up. A. That never happened. Thought that might happen at some point. All right, 312-981-7200 is our phone number. We'll take a break here. If you want to talk about it, get on the line now. Text in. Is NIU right to get rid of standardized tests as a requirement for admission? They did it. No longer do you need an ACT or an SAT score to get into NIU. Will other schools follow suit, or is it just a bad idea? Stay with us. All right, let's get back to NIU and the announcement today that they are getting rid of standardized tests as a requirement to get into the school. You say ACT, SAT, those kind of schools. And let's go to Colleen. Colleen, so tell me about your story. This is the
sure.
Yeah, go ahead.
So when I worked at DePaul University 5-10 years ago, they actually waived it then that you didn't necessarily have to submit a standardized test score to get admissions into undergrad admissions, but you could write an essay explaining, you know, your experiences and your extracurriculars and why you would be successful at a university. But to that point, a year ago, I enrolled in a PhD program focusing on higher education, and a GMAT score was required. And because those only last for about 10 years and you have to retake the test, I wrote an essay saying why the standardized test score from 10 years ago wouldn't be applicable to the work experience that I have in higher education, and that would make me an asset to their program.
Did it work?
And they... It did work. They actually waived my requirement, but they waived the requirement actually for everybody going into that program from here on out, saying you're correct, it wouldn't be applicable to the degree.
So you swayed the whole system. Your essay worked. The power of the word. Way
that's
to go.
Right.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you, Colleen. Thank you. Thanks for that story. That's amazing. That's amazing. How about that? That's probably the most powerful essay in the history of essays. Thomas Paine be damned. Wow. Because you're writing an essay to get into school. Isn't it the end of The Breakfast Club? Isn't it what Anthony Michael Hall's writing the essay about The Breakfast Club? This is Colleen's is better. Put some Simple Minds behind that. Way to go, Colleen. 815 says, at my kid's high school, the entire junior class takes the test in school, no charge. If you want to retake it, you have to pay and find a testing site. I don't remember. They didn't do that for my school. And I'm dating myself. I mean, this was the late 80s, right? Or early 90s, 91. Let me think. Right here, right now. Yeah, it was 91. That's when. I just remember having to go to like Grays Lake or one of the community colleges to take the test. And you weren't taking the test in the school. That might just be a school. I don't know. I was in college when some schools experimented with pass-fail rather than grades. It screwed up a lot of people trying to transfer or move on to grad school. Now, that's a great point. What are the repercussions of this for grad school, for, transferring to other places, and what are those credits? But I don't know if that matters once you get into school, right? Does grad school really looking at what your ACT was? Probably not. 815 Alfredo. Hi, Alfredo. He says, Harvard acceptance rate, 4.5%. U of C's acceptance rate, what, 7%? U of Illinois, U of I, 60%. When Northern Illinois has an acceptance rate of nearly 100%, won't it cheapen the degree? After all, they did let anyone into the school. Well, anyone over a 3.0 grade average. So I wonder if that will factor in some form. They're not just letting any. It's not open enrollment. You have to get a 3.0 or better. And I would assume that if there's a... They're saying you automatically get in. But if there's a room issue, maybe they pick the higher grade point average. I'm not really sure. Let's go to Adam. Adam, what do you think, Adam?
Hi. This conversation really does impact me a lot. I not only went to NIU, but I got my bachelor's, my master's there, and I tried to get into teaching. And so the standardized testing system had really impacted me in a number of ways. One, my SAT wasn't very good, and two, I had to try to become a teacher doing the basic skills, which is also very much a set of standardized testing. I currently am a history professor right now, and I did not have good scores, number one, in the language and the writing, because even though I had a very strong first language is English, it was a Texan English, and it wasn't the same applicable type of score. Like the things that they actually put on the test, for example, they're not always very, not only culturally relevant, but then also when it comes to language attainment. A lot of the math questions, for example, regardless of language, folks do decently well if you're okay and you understand math. But the word problems, the science problems,
yeah, right.
Just in general.
That's where the bias comes in. Right.
There's a language bias. I mean, if you want to, as a historian, one of the things, standardized testing never really had historically marginalized folks in mind when it first started. So anytime that you have something of a standard, you always have to say it's the standard of whom.
That's a great point.
But again, you know, that itself opens up a whole can of worms, as they say, because there is a lot. There's a lot of political, meanings to it. I myself, just a comment, last thing about this, I really like what NIU is doing here, because I'm pretty sure, as somebody who has taught at NIU for some time before that, working with some of those students who do not have the GPA or do not have the ACT score, right there, we would always funnel them into college prep classes. Because it's a big thing here. There's a difference between the whole word of remediation and development. You know, you can't be remediated on something you've never been taught before. We have a lot of folks in here that will benefit from this, who are going to be first generation college students. They're going to benefit and give the entire campus a better, you know, not only difference of thought, but of course they're going to then go and do something that a lot of the standardized testing can really discourage folks. And again, you had a caller talk about it and say, if you had a bad day when you went to go and test at an ACT or SAT, you want to try to tell somebody who's from a lower socioeconomic status, here, you need to retake this and it's going to cost,
because I
took it three times. It's about $200. It's
a lot of money.
Not a quick.
Thank you for calling. He's right. He's absolutely right. Good job. There is a bias. I'm sure when they started standardized testing, they didn't think about the marginalized communities. And he's absolutely right that if you don't do well on the test, it starts to cost money to retake the test. Not to mention that what happens when people do take the test and do take that test and do take the test and finally get in, whether or not they were prepared. I don't know. I wonder about what one of the callers was talking about earlier, just about, you know, again, are we going to see, if you get rid of a standardized test, which I'm all for, but are you going to see a less prepared student body? Are you going to see kids that might have used some sort of bias for getting straight A's at a school that maybe wasn't as stringent coming in and not being prepared? I'm not saying that the ACT or the SAT does that for you and prepares you, but it definitely gets you in a college state of mind. That's something to think about. Good topic. Thanks for your contributions, everybody. Hard to believe it was a year ago that we were first learning the name Jussie Smollett. I knew Jussie Smollett as a rabid Empire fan. I kid. It was this time, it was January 29th, 2019, that we first heard of an alleged attack on a star of Empire who was living right here in Streeterville, right around the corner from our studio, that he was attacked and he was racially and homophobically slurred, and it was awful to hear him explain what happened to him. There was a noose, there was bleach, there was racial slurs, there was MAGA thrown out. It got the attention of everybody, the whole world. It got made, the president had to talk about it. There was a Good Morning America interview that came out right afterwards. And then we found out that it was all possibly fake. A crazy story that started this night a year ago. Pretty nuts. Think about how that was only a year ago. Seems like it was 2-3 years ago at this point. Kind of blows my mind to think that today is the anniversary. I would love to talk about that story. I don't know if we'll talk about it tonight. I think maybe tomorrow night we could talk about it. Because it's obviously going to be a huge topic in the race for state's attorney, in the primary that's coming up in March. But at the end of the day, we still don't know what happened. We don't know who's lying. We don't know anything about it. All we know is that Jussie Smollett is a household name now. Yeah, so tomorrow night we'll talk about it. I'll throw out my hot take. I keep thinking tomorrow. I know I'm going to get myself in trouble because I keep thinking tomorrow is going to be like breaking news in the revolution. It did happen. We'll all be like, what? I don't know. There's a little something in the back of my head that is not right about any of that story. A year later, still thinking about it. And I'm not saying I'm right or wrong, but it's just and I know that this is a charged topic, and I would love to talk about it tomorrow. We still just don't know. Maybe the special prosecutor will get to the bottom of it, but something tells me the special prosecutor is just getting to the bottom of why Kim Fox let him go. 312-981-7200. Coming up, Greg Flamm is here. He looks healthy. He looks strong. He's not wearing a mask. That's a good start. And last week, we missed the swap meet because he fell ill. And he is back, and he is stronger than ever. I saw him doing the Rocky IV push-ups and getting ready. The whole, you know, when they do the montage where he's pulling the cart, you know, maybe bouncing a tire, getting ready for the fight to It's a Burning Heart by Survivor. No, Greg Flamm is back. He's in the building. He's up next. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. If you got some memorabilia, you got some souvenirs, you got some junk. I thought about it this way today. It's that moment where you're looking at it and you're like, why do I still have this thing? What am I doing with this thing? Should I throw it out? And right before you throw it out, you're like, I'm not going to throw it out because maybe it's worth some money. So you call in, you text in, and Greg tells you, no, it's not worth any money. And then you go, all right, great. And then you throw it out. And then you have all that space to go buy something from IKEA. There's just all options that have been given to you thanks to Greg and how he's going to change your life tonight. And best brag gets you a prize. How about that? You got the best one. It's usually something from political history of Illinois, Chicago. I love that stuff. 312-981-7200. Although, wasn't it the tuna, the starfish or star-kissed tuna lamp? That was in the basement. I forgot the gentleman's name, but he was keeping it despite his brothers. That was a great brag. Last time we talked. 312-981-7200. Greg Flamm coming up next. And like I said, we're on until 11 o'clock tonight. Nick DiGilio up after that. And tomorrow, I'm not letting you forget this, tomorrow is the Ultimate Movie, Ultimate Chicago Movie Cage Match finale. Ferris Bueller versus the Blues Brothers. Boy, oh boy. Wow. All that, the tomorrow, it's going to be the hit. It's going to be viral tomorrow. We're going to put up the poll, do the whole thing starting in the morning. I know it. I don't even know who's going to win that one. Ferris Bueller or the Blues Brothers. That's coming up tomorrow. here on 720 WGN. But tonight, coming up next, it's Greg Flamm and the Swap Meet. Get in line now, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200, the phone number. Justin Kaufman with you here on 720 WGN. Greg Flamm is in the building, S2 Page Picker. It's time for the Swap Meet, where we take calls and texts, your favorite memorabilia, your collectibles, your junk. We'll evaluate it. That's what Greg does, and he is in studio. Good to see you, buddy.
Good to be here. Thanks.
This is a segment we've been doing for a while now, so 312-981-7200. You know how it goes, and the best brag tonight is going to win you a prize. So get on the line now and text. Greg, great to have you back and in the land of the living.
Yeah, it seems like it was only an allergy thing, so thank God for that.
Oh, so really you're just calling in sick.
You're yeah, you know.
Playing hooky last week. Last week there was no swap meet because Greg was sick.
Right.
He faked it.
I'm sorry, everyone. Needed
it. I was talking it up like you were, like it was Ferris Bueller. I'm like, oh, I don't know. I don't know if Greg's going to make it.
Yeah. That's going to be a rough one tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
Should be pretty close.
Ferris and Blues Brothers. All right. So Greg brings in some stuff. How is the week? I mean, how is January? Is January a tough time because people are all...
Yeah, there's still enough estate sales, but I have so much back stock that I haven't really gone out too much, you know, the last couple of months. I try to stay in more and list more of the items that I, you know, accumulated over the summer and the fall. So I'm having fun doing that. It's almost like picking yourself. You know, like
yeah, right.
I have piles of stuff, so it's good to kind of dig through that and see, oh, yeah, I remember buying that a year ago. So
when you have – I had a couple questions before to get to the stuff that's in studio.
Yep.
The number one story of the week is Kobe Bryant.
Mm-hmm.
Kobe Bryant, of course, you know, dies. There's been so much talk about all of his memorabilia.
Yeah.
Because he is, of course, a legend on the court. Do you see a spike when it comes to eBay? When someone dies tragically like this, do you see his memorabilia go skyrocket?
Yeah, it's a touchy subject, but there is a spike and more on the supply and demand, like rare items, autographed items. I heard the other day there was a rookie card signed. They're asking like $1 million for it.
Wow.
So, yeah, it happens, you know. Yeah, I normally don't participate in stuff, you know, when it's a tragedy.
Well, obviously, it's a tragedy, it's morbid, but it is interesting to see how the eBay community reacts, because I would think everybody puts their Kobe Bryant memorabilia or their collectible stuff on.
Yeah, it's definitely a thing, that's for sure. I mean, people look for it right away. If someone passes, they're looking to buy items. You know, I have listed in the past, like when Larry Lujack passed, I listed a lot of my Animal Stories records and items like that. But, you know, you just try to be fair, you know, don't gouge people, you know, try to make it a fair price, you know. So
in the case of such a legend and who has signed and had come up in this age where memorabilia is different than it was, say, in the 50s and 60s, mm-hmm. because of the way that the world has reacted to Kobe Bryant's death, mm-hmm. and you see all the what an amazing tribute at the Staples Center. It looks like something right out of, like I was taking my earlier, like John Lennon. Does that mean that you're going to see Kobe Bryant memorabilia stay on the market on much longer? Is there going to just be a market for Kobe Bryant stuff for years to come?
Yeah, I would think so, because you know, I'm still saying, like, when Prince passed, it's still, and then now they have the tribute concert coming up, so that's going to be another spike for that. You know, even the Willis Tower has the colors up tonight, you know, driving in Kobe Bryant Lakers colors. So yeah, it's going to be there for quite a while. I would think another, you know, easily a year, you know, that's going to...
That's true. Okay, so let's talk about something else that's in the news today. I didn't even know this was still a company, but Atari, mm-hmm. Or at least there are Atari-themed hotels that are coming online.
Yeah,
one that is
fun.
Planned for Chicago, an idea to theme a whole hotel experience mm-hmm. after Atari.
Right.
Atari is an area of your expertise. We talk about it a lot. Yeah. Is this good for business when it comes to reselling Atari?
I would think so.
It's going to be a hotel?
Yeah, I mean, anytime it's in the news, I think there's a little bit of a spike. If anything's in the news, we'll talk about some of the items I brought today. But yeah, Atari usually does fairly well anyway, and then when there's something in the news, it's just going to spike, you know. But the concept sounds really cool. I hope they make it a, you know, one price and you can play unlimited games. I hope that's what they're doing instead of having a pocket full of quarters and you know,
working on. Well, I'm hoping to get the Frogger room.
Right.
It's just, that would be a good room.
I'm more a centipede guy. So.
Centipede room.
Or Qbert.
Yeah, right. A Qbert room.
Right.
Greg Flamm is here at DuPage Picker, both on Facebook and Twitter, also on YouTube and Instagram. We're talking about memorabilia and, of course, we're here to evaluate your collectibles, your junk, whatever you got. Give us a call, and Greg will tell you what it's worth. 312-981-7200. You bring stuff in for us to look at stuff that you've collected. What do you got today?
So the Oscar Mayer Mobile was in the news recently for getting a ticket for, I guess, going too slow. And, of course, John Williams had all the puns and jokes earlier this afternoon. I thought that was interesting. So I listed, you know, I had probably 8 or 9 Oscar Wienermobile items.
It was in the news because it got a ticket.
Yeah, right? I forget which state it was. Someone might text that in for us. But, yeah, I listed 8 or 9 things, and 2 of them already sold today. I had a couple plush Wienermobile items, and they already sold. So I brought in a Wienermobile car. This isn't the vintage one. This is the made in China, probably 19, late 80s or early 90s.
It's the Wienermobile, but a toy.
But it's a bank as well.
Oh, it's a bank.
Then, of course, there's the common whistles. These are very common. But these still get about $8 to $10 just for the whistle.
It's a whistle?
Yeah, it's a whistle. You blow through that end, and there's the whole, you know.
I know you're sick, but give it a ring.
Okay. So there.
Good.
Anyway,
it's
but
radio,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, you know. And the vehicle, if you have the 1950s or 60s in the box still, those are like $200.
Wow. So are you kidding
cool.
me? Wow.
This one's just $20 because it's more of a repro. But yeah, so I brought that, and then my favorite thing, I kind of hesitant to sell, but it was recently in the news as well for an anniversary, was the PBS show, Children's Show Zoom, which I was a big fan of. You know, I'm in my 50s, so I grew up on that, and back in the day when there's only like 7 or 8 TV channels, this, you know, PBS was a big thing. You know, Electric Company, Zoom, Sesame Street,
of course, all of them, right?
You know, yeah, so it was great. So, and the big joke is like, who did you have your crush? Who was, you know, your crush? And I text or I hashtagged finally over my crush on Nina. So, but I brought the poster. Like, I have 2 records. One came with this huge poster. And this is the record here, but then there's another record.
So there's
the
original album, songs and stuff.
Yeah.
Come On and Zoom.
Yep.
And then a huge poster. Which
yeah,
you
like
have
36
to...
by 24, and none on eBay right now. So
I was going to say, is Zoom and any of the old children's shows from PBS, are those a hot item on eBay?
Yeah, Zoom for sure. Some of the Electric Company items can do well. Obviously, Sesame Street, you know, depending what it is and how rare it is. But this, it seemed like I think they had a run on the Zoom items because there was a, you know, it was in the news a couple weeks ago for an anniversary. And then they did do a like a new show of it in 97, I believe, for about a year or 2.
Yeah, right.
So that, you know, kind of spiked a little bit. So,
It's good to see a little into your soul. That's your hashtag.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know,
from Zoom.
Well, lay down on the couch and examine my childhood here between the Oscar Mayer Wienermobile and Zoom.
Zoom.
I was going to bring in my Flex records, but I'll bring those in maybe next week. I got Banana Splits. I got Michael Jackson.
Them all.
You cut them out of the back of the cereal boxes. That's really my passion, our Flex records.
312-981-7200, the phone number. If you got something for Greg to evaluate, let's start with Rich. Rich is on the line. Rich, how are you?
Not too bad. How are you guys doing tonight?
Hey, good. What do you got? What do you want to brag about?
This is an old chemistry set out of the mid to late 50s.
Okay.
Not much of the stuff is left in it, but it actually came with, I think it was probably a chunk of uranium and a Geiger counter.
Okay. I've heard of those.
And sure.
And a couple certificates that you could send in and get more radioactive material if you wanted it.
Right. Okay. So there you go.
Do you happen to have any brand or any markings from it?
No, I'm driving a truck now, so it's not in front of me.
No,
I thought of it when you guys were talking about.
Yeah.
I'll have to do some searching during the break, and I'll try to get some.
But old chemistry sets, obviously, they get your attention, but they have to be somewhat complete, or how does it work?
Well, especially he was talking about uranium, and the certificates and stuff like that can determine value. Some of the old microscope kits as well, you know, can do well.
The kits. The certificates are still there, but I'm pretty sure the uranium's not there.
Of course, yeah.
You sold that to the Libyans.
Right.
No, I didn't.
Right.
That's a little Back to the Future joke.
Yeah, I know. I know, but yeah, you never know if the people in the black helicopters are listening to us.
We got one. Right. He's in the truck. Yeah. Right. All right.
Yeah.
All right, thanks,
Rich. Yeah, hard to get a price for that because there's different ones, you know, that were out. So,
all right, Greg Flamm is here at DuPage Picker on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. We got some text. We got some calls. Corey's on the line. Let me take this quick break, Corey, and we'll come back. We'll start with you. 312-981-7200. It's a swap meet. Stay with us. 720 WGN, Justin Kaufman with you. It's the swap meet right now with Greg Flamm, who you can find on social media at DuPage Picker. That's Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, TikTok,
Instagram, all that. Yeah.
All that, right. All right, let's get to some callers and some texts who have some memorabilia and collectibles they want to brag about. Let's start with Corey, as promised. Corey, what do you want to brag about?
Hey, guys, I don't know if it's something to brag about, but I have Davy Jones's original driver's license from the time he was in the Monkees.
Wow.
What, like the real driver's license?
His real driver's license. His daughter's had an estate sale after he passed, and I was able to pick it up along with the billfold that he brought over from England. It was issued in 65 in California and expired on his birthday in 67. It was right in the prime time when the Monkees were
wild.
That's an awesome piece of memorabilia, man.
I have no idea if something like that, you know, appreciates. I mean, I would assume it does, but probably not too much. But I've got all kinds of weird stuff, but that's just one of them.
That's awesome. Yeah, you're definitely in the lead for a prize. That's
right.
Amazing.
I won't be able to put a price on that for sure. But
do you see that kind of stuff? Do you see driver's license and stuff that was owned by celebrities?
Yeah, I've seen it on eBay. I don't come across it too often myself, but that's such a unique, like, one-off type item. So it's definitely an auction type item, and you might even want to look into an auction house maybe and see if they want to take it and you know.
Yeah, really, what an interesting one.
Yeah, but yeah, that's really neat.
I like that.
I don't know. I'd have to say it's in the $200 to $300 item to start and go from there with an auction.
I just love that he said in a state sale, like,
yeah,
I will take the driver's license. I like it. I like it, Corey. Good job.
Yep.
All right, 219's got a, I don't know what you call this, a poster, a placemat of Meet the Lincoln Mercury Sports Panel and the 1971 Lincoln and Mercury Automobiles. And in it, it's a bunch of local car dealers who have signatures next to their name, and then the fancy cars that are part of the fleet from 1971. It's a car poster. What do we think of those? Because those will go for money. You sold a couple of those before.
Yeah, that I saw the picture that they sent in. It's got probably, what, a dozen cars on there, and I don't know how big that is size-wise, but if it's just like a 14 by 11 sheet, you know, I have to say it's probably in the $40 range to start. It might go higher than that. If it's larger, then it's more money as well. So,
people go crazy for just posters of cars?
Yeah, for sure, especially, you know, like 80s, you know, I've sold. I had a Lincoln Mercury poster in here about a month ago, and I ended up selling that for $175. So,
what about a 1984 Dodge Colt?
Dodge Colt?
Is that a poster of a Dodge Colt?
Yeah,
not going for much.
Yeah, not much. Mm-hmm. Probably 25, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all right. This is a great one. 347 says, "I got that fridge poster. This is the poster. Keep plenty of Coke in the refrigerator with the fridge,
the
can of Coke." In uniform, that's a classic 85.
Yeah, I don't see that one too much. I see other, William Perry refrigerator posters, but not that one. So,
well, that's a classic, right?
Yeah, it is. And I'd say it's probably $60 to $75.
Yeah. Isn't there an accompanying commercial for that one? Isn't there one where he's like, he can't keep enough fridge in the Coke in the fridge? Like, he says that line. I feel like there's like a moment.
There probably was, yeah.
Because he was McDonald's, he was Coca-Cola,
yeah,
he was all that kind of stuff.
He was all over, yeah.
Yeah, well, I hope he saved his money. Yeah. All right, let's keep going. I have a 1989 Batman custom coupe, complete with Bruce Wayne while he's wearing the purple shirt. I don't know what that means.
Yeah, that's just a dress, obviously. I wasn't able to find with the Bruce Wayne you know, with the purple shirt. The vehicle itself is sold for $50 just with no extra parts or anything and no
what is it? It's a toy?
It's like a... Yeah, it's just a toy Batmobile, not the action figure that he's speaking of with the purple shirt.
So. And an extra $399 on top of that.
If you have it in the box, it could be $200-$300, you know, if you have it brand new.
708 says, okay, solid state devices just about spelled the end of electrical tubes. But I've heard there's a secondary market for tubes.
There is.
Should I remove them from the equipment I have that no longer works, or is it not worth it?
I've sold tubes before, and I don't even bother taking them out. I just sell the item as is. I just try to, you know, open up the back and get a model number off the tube, and then you can look it up to see if it is worthwhile. The problem with tubes are if they're not tested, you know, you're going from worthless to $300, you know, so you... It really helps to have them tested. You could take it to, there's a place in Woodridge that I go to called Deltronics, and they'll test it for you. They might charge you 10 or 20 bucks.
Can I be the Gen Xer in the room that didn't pay attention? What do you mean by electrical tubes?
Yeah, it's like a vacuum tube. It looks like almost like a light bulb, you know. Generally, the bigger, the better. But yeah, he was right. We went from tubes to solid state. As far as electronics and radios. But
so it's
you'll
for radios, it's for stereos?
Yeah, for amplifiers, vintage. You know, you usually see the tubes like in a Grundig radio, you know, kind of your grandfather's radio. You know, and some of those tubes are, you know, $300. So just the tube itself. So,
I can go take a look at that. 312-981-7200. Come over here. I want to show you the text because I got a great poster. Hibernation. Now, this is a poster of the Bears. You don't see this one this often, Greg. Take a look at this. This is the Bears, 85 Bears, it looks like. So that's a Neil Anderson there. And they are, that looks like a Ron Rivera, which is hilarious. And they are in a zoo setting with a grizzly bear. And they have their shirts off. And it's called hibernation, and they give the definition, but it's like the bears are part of the zoo at Lincoln Park Zoo.
The size of his finger, it looks like a two-page.
Oh, there you go.
Like centerfold.
Yeah. This is awesome. I've never seen this one. So, it looks like it's Ron Rivera. It might be a Dave Duerson, a Neil Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
That might be a Tom Thayer in the back there. That's hilarious.
I have not seen that one.
And they're all surrounded by a grizzly bear. It's a poster. It's called Hibernation, the idea being there at the zoo in the grizzly bear display or whatever you call exhibit, and I've never seen that one. That's amazing.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm trying to look.
You got
it up
a lot of different 80s, 85, 86, 87 Bears posters, but this is one we haven't seen before, and I love it.
I'll keep an eye out for that one.
Have you seen it? I mean, it's called Hibernation, the art of hibernation, and they give like a kind of a nature exhibit explanation. Now, in the background, it's a Channel 2. It says Channel 2, so it looks like it's a Channel 2 promotion, maybe?
Yeah, and the size looks like it's like a centerfold for a magazine. It doesn't look like a large poster, per se.
So maybe it was an ad for Channel 2.
Mm-hmm. But how rare that is, I'd have to say it's probably in the $35 range to start. I'd definitely do an auction on it if you do sell it.
I don't have any expertise in this, but I would say at least $10,000 for this.
All right, $1 million.
Greg might give you $35 for it or think it's worth $35, but I think this is the best thing I've ever seen.
It is pretty cool.
Just for the shirtless Ron Rivera, who's now the coach of the Redskins, that's hilarious. Because you're like, I'd love to show up at a press conference and be like, could you sign this, Mr. Rivera, Coach Rivera? And then also a shirtless Tom Thayer.
Right.
This is a really stupid poster. I like it. All right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Greg Flam is here. 312-981-7200. We've got some great texts that are coming in, some calls as well. We'll take a break here, and we'll come back for the second half of the swap meet. As Mary says, this is such a nice thing that she says here. She says, I love hearing the... Where did it go? I love... Every time I hear the familiar strains of the Antique Roadshow theme song that we play at the top, it lifts my spirits, anticipating the Flam Jam.
That's awesome.
Never heard the Flam Jam. Mary, that's good. I think you've just given him a new show title. Let's get rid of Swap Meet. The Flam Jam.
I've been called the Flam Man before, but not Flam Jam.
Flam Jam.
Yeah.
It's time.
I'll take it.
Coming up the second half of the Flam Jam. Stay with us. 312-981-7200. The phone number, it is the Swap Meet. Here on 720 WGN, Greg Flam at DuPage Picker on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and YouTube. He is a picker who can evaluate your collectibles, your memorabilia, and your junk. You can decide whether or not today's the day you throw it out or whether or not you're rich based on
right.
Corey is leading the pack in terms of the best item tonight.
Yeah,
Davy Jones's driver's license. So specific.
The real
That's
deal,
so
yep.
But the second half has just started of the swap meet. We like to call the flam jam as well. let's go to June, who's standing by on the line. Murray. June, what do you want to brag about, June?
Hi. I actually, it's not mine. It's my mom's, but it was her grandmother's, and it's an original Singer sewing machine.
Oh, yeah. Those are big.
Okay.
Really?
And you have no idea, like, what year or what decade it might be?
It's well over 100 years old, and okay. I was thinking of just donating it to, like, a museum.
Hmm.
Okay. Well,
I don't know.
Yeah, that's a nice thing to do if you want to do that. I mean, if you're trying to sell it... in my business, you know, some are 60, some are 300, some are, you know, I'm seeing some 1920. If you got all the accessories, like $2,000 with all the accessories.
Yeah.
But just a machine, even just a machine, $1,700 for like a 1930. So,
it's older than that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, if you want to send me a picture through Facebook, I can check it out and maybe identify it further.
Have you ever used it? Does it work?
I've never used it, no.
I wouldn't even know, yeah.
But I wouldn't even know, yeah.
What I've noticed, some of those old, they built them to last. So, I mean, chances are it still works. I mean, because almost every one that I found that I have sold, it works, you know, because they just
made them to last. Yeah, and it's so heavy that we had to get piano movers to move it up in our attic. Wow. So, I mean, it's... ancient.
Yeah. I guarantee if it were me, June, in the first 5 minutes of getting that thing to work, I'd cut my hand.
Yeah.
Like, I just tell you, those things and I do not get along, and I have no idea what I'm doing. Yeah, you're not supposed to put your hand underneath it, right?
Right.
That's why they make thimbles, right?
Right. June, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. That's thanks awesome. A lot.
Let's go to Doc. Doc, what do you want to brag about, Doc?
Hey, I used to collect Superman stuff, and I got rid of most of it, but I have 100 used Superman T-shirts. Okay. Most of them were purchased from, I would say, around 85 to 2000.
You're going to have to explain that to me. Used T-shirts. So
correct.
Where are you finding used Superman T-shirts?
He wore them.
They were all purchased new.
Yeah. Oh,
they used
you
to be
wore
exclusively what I wore. But
you
I
had 100 Superman shirts?
Yes.
I'm so intrigued, man. I have like 10 shirts in rotation, and they're all kind of Old Navy blue. How did you wear 100 Superman T-shirts?
Well, some of the ones that were my favorite are a lot more used than some of the others.
Yeah,
but
right.
Eventually, I got around to wearing them all. And then I have a few of nicer things, like silk-style Hawaiian Superman shirts jogging suits, and I used to have 25 Superman ties.
Wow.
I did like 500 to 900 a week for about 6 months on eBay getting rid of
what was the obsession with Superman? What was it about Superman that drew you to getting all this stuff?
From 85 to 87, I spent 3 years as a professional mystery shopper, and I drove all over the United States shopping Kentucky Fried Chickens. I used to buy chicken 300 times a month,
and
I had to go to Metropolis, Illinois, and I bought some Superman stuff. And any time I had on something Superman-related, little kids would go, "Hey, Mommy, it's Superman." And then people started buying me Superman stuff, and I started collecting it I went around the country.
And they collect
and I bought
you,
a lot of limited edition art. I had stuff from every decade but the 30s. You know, I had stuff from the 40s, 50s, lunchboxes, puzzles.
I love following the Doc rabbit hole, because now I'm off of the Superman, and I'm like, get back to the mystery shop. So you're going to KFCs around the country for quality control? Like, you're hired by KFC to go in there and eat their chicken and see which ones aren't up to snuff?
We were secret shoppers. You always ordered food to go, because I've done as many as 45 of them in a day.
Oh, wow. Man.
In a place like Detroit, or I'm from Kansas City, I could shop all 35 of them in Kansas City in one day.
Wow.
But you're looking for certain service things while you're in there, cleanliness things, always ordered food to go, record the temperatures of the product, look at things like the chop size on the coleslaw, the dressing, were the mashed potatoes too thick, too thin.
Wow.
The corporation dreamed up the program and then let private shopping services compete to provide this service to franchisees.
Nice. Was one of the categories?
I drove 300,000 miles.
That's unbelievable.
Around the United States.
Wow. Was one of the categories how sassy the cashier was?
Well, not sassy, but boy, you had to be really careful in how you describe people because you couldn't like accidentally describe the owner's wife as overweight. I remember when I used to go to Long Island. If you went in there on Saturday or Sunday morning, half the girls would have hickeys. Couldn't mention that, you know.
There's your title for the web. There,
all right,
Pete.
back to the swap meet.
Superman shirts. I'm thinking, I could make pillows. I could sew the collar and the sleeves.
Right, people are doing that, repurposing. Right. But just a t-shirt alone, you'll do fine. I don't think you'll have to put like for repurposing. But they're like $75 to $150, even upwards of
per shirt.
Yeah, for like a 1992 Superman, it's still going for like $50 to $60. So.
Wow.
Did you like group them in groups of five and put them on eBay, or
only if they're the lower end, like $20 or $30 ones, then you can lot them together. But I would probably do individually. I think be your best bet.
Especially
I know it's time
ones,
consuming,
right?
But yeah, I think it would be worth it to price each one and kind of see what you got.
Wow, Doc, it has been a pleasure.
That's awesome.
Thank you for the call, buddy.
All right, thanks.
Yeah, there you go. Right,
what a life.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. That's why the swap meet is gold, man.
Yeah, I mean, I did 6 years McDonald's management, so I know those secret shoppers.
You know them?
I mean, I don't know them personally, but I know they came in.
So you could tell when someone's coming in? Doc would come in and be like, let me get number three.
And he said he always got it to go, and we would have them both in drive-through or in the lobby, and they grade you on all different things.
Did they come back and grade you right then, or did they just find out?
Yeah, well, sometimes they would grade you like in the parking lot and then come in a half an hour later and talk to you about it and show you what you did and what you didn't do, and then they report that to your boss, and it's a fun time.
When I worked at the grocery store Omni on Route 31 in McHenry, don't look for it, it's no longer there.
I used to live near one.
The only thing they had which was close was Mr. Dominic himself would come through there and check it out. That was one. And the two was they had the security guys, and they kind of be off, or they wouldn't be in uniform. And so when they were maybe checking out a shoplifter, which usually would be, they would get in line with a loaf of bread, pretend they were shopping.
Right.
So you'd know them as the cashier because you're like, oh, hey, there's Greg. And you want to say hi, but you're like, oh, yeah, right. I can't. They'd be pretending they have like a jar of peanut butter, like, I'm just shopping.
Yeah.
Like, all right. Everybody in the line knew it was up.
I've seen that at Target. They come out of the back room and they just like grab some stuff off the shelf and throw it in their basket, and then they're following the person.
It's like, all right.
I see you.
All right. 705 says, in the 70s, Elton John was recording in Toronto. He came north to our town, Stouffville, to watch a hockey game. I sat beside him, and I got his autograph. Stupid me, I gave it to a girl. What would it be worth today? Thanks.
Just the autograph, like on a piece of paper, can still go for like $150. I do see some Elton John signatures that went for $200, $300. It all kind of would depend what he signed. If he signed an album or if he signed a hockey stick, that would be awesome, or a hockey puck even. That would be awesome. That could be maybe $400, $500.
He's not going to have
a piece of paper.
Elton John LP on him.
Well, right. But, you're at the hockey game, maybe you could sign the program or something, that he had there. That would have, been a little bit better than just a piece of paper, signed. Right. But he did give it to his ex-girlfriend or a girlfriend.
To a girl.
Yeah.
This makes it seem random. He's like, look what I got. I got this autograph. Would you like this autograph?
But that's what we talk about. Stuff you get at a game hardly makes it home. Hardly makes it home.
Rarely is it intercepted by a girl.
That is different. Yeah, that is a different scenario.
I remember this story that one time I won an award, right? And I was dating a girl who was, it was a food award. It was a James Beard Award.
Okay.
And she had said to me, she was a chef. She was at Kendall College. And I go, yeah, I won a James Beard. She's like, no, you didn't. And I'm like, yes, I did. And I pulled it out. I'm like, here it is. She's like, can I borrow this? I'm like, go ahead. Why not? Yeah. Like a total idiot. I was 21 years old. In the process of her borrowing it, we break up. So now it's like a Larry Davis, like a Curb Your Enthusiasm, where I'm like, that was really sad. I'm really sad.
Yeah.
I'm going to need that back.
Yeah.
She finally came back with it, like coming back with their CDs.
Right, that's what I was going to say. Yeah. Like,
she got some barbecue sauce on the on the ribbon.
Nice.
It's like, come on. Yeah. I learned my lesson. Yeah. So I'm with you, 7779.
That's a tough
one. All right, 708. How much are the old Lionel train sets worth? You hear this one a lot. Train sets kind of go
for all over the board. You need, you need
like on the high end. Let's say they're perfect. Let's say it's perfect.
Yeah, if you got the whole set. I mean, they do go for thousands. You know, just single cars can go for that, depending which car it is, condition, you know, which set it belonged to, what, you know, if there's like a advertising or if it's a, like a coal company marking on it or something, you know.
Man, I would love to do that. I would love to do like a full-on train set with the little trees and the fake, you know, little post office.
I think if you went the room during the holidays, if you just went to some of the stores that do set that up, you would get that out of your system right away. You get to see it, enjoy it, and then leave it because setting it up and tearing it down is not fun.
I don't have the room in my Chicago townhome. I don't have the time or patience either. So there's two other categories.
I think
they
do a monthly train show in Schaumburg at one of
they do?
Yeah, so you can go there and enjoy it and leave it.
All right, let's go to Bill. Bill, what do you want to brag about, Bill?
Not really brag. I'd like to know, does he have some place recommend where I could take it or bring it to him? I've got a bunch of jewelry that belonged to my wife, passed away about 3 years ago.
Sorry to hear that.
And a lot of it, there's diamonds and gold rings and gold jewelry and emeralds and rubies and sapphires and
stuff
like that. And
it's definitely out of my wheelhouse. Yeah. I would look, just into like a gold and silver, place that can evaluate that for you. It's out of my wheelhouse.
Are those places like that that will do that?
You can Google, gold people who buy gold and silver, have them evaluate it. Chances are, what I try to advise is, the first time you go in there, don't sell it. Just get the information. And if you think you have something really high end, you might want to have someone with you, a lawyer or somebody who, can help you out with that. Yeah, protect you.
Yeah, good luck, Bill.
Okay.
Sorry for your loss. Thanks for the call. All right. So let's keep going here. 312-981-7200. All right. Let's see. We did the train sets. What about some old denim jeans from the 60s and the 70s? I got about 10 pairs of Levi's, says 630.
Yeah,
I think they were my mom's and my uncle's just hanging in garment bags in the attic.
Yeah, big money in jeans. I don't come across them myself too much as far as the $1,000 pair or anything like that, but I know they sell for thousands. I mean, we had Joy in here, Joy Williams. She talked about it. She's an expert in that. So if you want to message me, I can pass you on to her or her group that discusses jeans.
Denim, yeah.
But yeah, I think recently a guy sold a pair or a jean jacket, I think, for like $4,000, and he hand delivered it to Japan. I think he brought it to Japan.
He's
to
like, make the transaction. I got the money, right?
Yep.
You can find Greg at DuPage Picker on Facebook and Twitter and YouTube and Instagram. Greg Flam joins us every Wednesday for the swap meet. 312-981-7200. We'll take our last break here. We'll come back. I got a ton of texts and some people on the line as well. We'll get to all that here on 720 WGN. Stay with us. 312-981-7200. Justin Kaufman with you for a couple more minutes with Greg Flam at DuPage Picker on Facebook and Twitter and YouTube and Instagram and TikTok and all the places. Friendster. Greg is here every Wednesday night to do the swap meet where we evaluate your collectibles, your memorabilia, and of course, your junk. Mm-hmm. Let's go to George, who's standing by. George, what do you want to brag about?
Yeah, my sister has a Wayne Gretzky stick that he played against the Florida Panthers many years ago, obviously, and probably one of his last games. Signed, autographed, the stick that he actually played with on the ice. What do you think that's worth?
What do you think that's worth? That stuff is what Greg has told me as he looks it up, what he's told me in the past, is a lot of that stuff, because most of the major sports stars of our time, they do that all the time. I mean, they're always signing everything they played with and what they're now. You see how the basketball players exchange jerseys and sign them. That dilutes it a little bit. But Wayne Gretzky in his last tour, I would think that still might be former sports stars. What do you think?
Yeah, the signed stick can still get, it looks like, $1,300 to $2,000. Yeah,
so. I'm completely wrong, George.
No, and
$2,000.
It normally is true, but Gretzky, for some reason, his stuff's still holding pretty good value.
That's awesome, man.
That is hanging up in my nephew's room.
You got it.
Just sitting there.
That sounds like a Mission Impossible mission. You got to go in there with the, and avoid the alarms.
Yeah, personally, I'm not so sure I would hold. I mean, if you're looking to
get the most money. I think your window is probably now, I would think. You know,
Oh, it's not me. It's my sister, and he's a baseball player. So, again, they don't even know. I'm up here in the Midwest. They're down there in Florida.
All right.
They don't even have a clue what they have.
Nice. Yeah, some people are like
you
that.
You can download the MP3 and then send it to them and be like, hey,
yep.
You know, that's your gift from me to you, family. No Christmas presents for the next 5 years. I got you covered.
Nice.
All right. Thanks, George.
Oh, my God. Thanks very much. Calling. Bye.
That's so true. All right, let's keep going here. We did the denim jeans. I got two sterling candlestick holders that given to me by my grandparents on our wedding day. We don't really do too much candlestick holder stuff.
Not
Frank
really.
M. Smith Company.
Yeah, I mean, you know, to me, they all look the same, so yeah. To be honest. So I'd have to probably spend a little bit more time on that if you want
right,
to text or email me that.
Yep. 224. So this is awesome. A Run TMC poster. If you remember Run TMC, that was Tim Hardaway, Mitch Richmond, and Chris Mullin on the Golden State Warriors. This was right, this pre Latrell Sprewell. But yeah, 11x14 photograph signed by all three. Run TMC, Tim Hardaway, Mitch Richmond, and Chris Mullin. Chris Mullin's got the classic 80s, 90s haircut, sitting there with his short shorts on.
Yeah, it's definitely a thing. I'm finding items on there, but I could not find a sign, so I don't know what to tell you as far as the autographs.
Those are good autographs, though.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big fan of that team. That was a good team. That was a team that did nothing, but they were fun to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Classic 80s basketball stuff. Mm-hmm. All right. 773 says the monthly train show and swap meet is out in Wheaton. It's good.
Yeah, Wheaton has one, yeah.
920 is asking the question, I have a growing collection of vintage children's books going back 100 years with some great illustrations. What would be your suggestion if I wanted to see what their worth was to get them appraised? What do you do with those?
How many did they have?
They said just said a growing collection.
Yeah, if it's like under 20, if you want to send me pictures, I'll be happy to look them up for you. If it's 50 to 100 books, then that's take a little bit more time.
What do you do in that case if you want to get those appraised?
I just find it easy enough to just look them up myself.
And just put them on eBay?
Yeah, and just do it that way, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Good call. Let's go to Kathleen. Kathleen, welcome to Swap Meet. What do you want to brag about?
My friend has one. I don't think your producer has any clue what I'm talking about. I hope you guys will. But it's an old bowling machine. It's a long... The pins go up.
Like an arcade game, yeah.
Yeah. What kind? Yeah. It's a long thing. You slide the puck down and the pins up and then they reset down.
Right.
Any clues?
Yeah. Well, obviously, a lot of those, if they've just been sitting around for 10, 20 years, they'll need to be sometimes rewired, definitely cleaned. But if it's in working condition where you can just turn it on and it works, I think it's still in the $1,200 to $1,400 range. Mm-hmm. But you know, I've seen where I can get one that needs to be fixed for $200. Yeah. So conditions, everything.
Or Kathleen, you can turn it into a chaise lounge.
My guess is there's like a cloth over it and it's being used to like fold laundry.
I'm just saying, I'm always thinking about you, thinking about new furniture options for your house.
Yeah,
you are the man. I'm telling you, it was an interesting thing. Where would you go to get it fixed or to find out how? I think it works a little bit, but.
And where do you send that stuff? There's got to be like places online.
Yeah, just Google like arcade repair or video game repair, there's places out there that will fix it. Yeah, or pinball machine repair.
Ooh, pinball machine. Yeah, it's probably in the same family.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Kathleen.
Thank you. Bye-bye. All right,
thank
you. 312-981-7200. People still jumping in here on the swap meet. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Got an autographed photo of Ernie Banks, black and white. Ernie Banks. Bob Surratt just played because it was an anniversary of his death.
Yeah, I heard that.
Right?
I was listening.
Yeah, so, I mean, a black and white photo, autographed, a guy like Ernie Banks, Mr. Cub.
Yeah, I think his autograph still goes for about $150, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
So, we've had calls before for Ernie.
Yeah, I would think that would still be worth money because people really want that kind of stuff, right? All right, this is an interesting one. I don't even know what to make of this one. All right, you ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
I have a handwritten letter. There's a picture of it, too. 773 says, a handwritten letter from Henry Winkler to the bursar's office at Yale University, where he was making a payment on his financial aid. What's cool is that he mentioned that he took a job acting on a television show called Happy Days, where he plays a character named Fonzie. Okay. All right. I think I can read this for you. Ready?
All right.
It says, Henry Winkler again. Please find $3,000. It's 2,900. I can't say. In money order form, that's for this, this, and this at Zale. If you are interested, I am doing a TV show starting in January at 8 p.m. on ABC called Happy Days. I play a character named Fonzie. Have a happy new year, and I look forward to next year's something. Regards, Henry.
Yep.
It's 1973. November 27th, 1973. That's funny.
Yeah. I
don't know where you...
Oddly, a letter... I see a couple letters that have only sold for $30, but if they have like a signed poster of the Fonz or something, then you're talking to $300.
Really?
Yeah.
I think the letter's better.
You would think. I mean, that's got an awesome better letter. Story, right?
I love it at the end. He's like, hey, and if you're interested, like it's right. Social media before social, he's promoting himself.
Right. And you could tell the way he's talking about it. It's pre or right when Happy Days was starting.
How cool is that, yep. Right? All right. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
262 says they have a 1975 Evel Knievel stunt cycle.
Now we're talking.
In the box. Unopened.
Yep.
In brand new condition.
Right up my wheelhouse there. In the box, everything there, they're going for upwards of $900.
$900. Yeah,
so that's pretty cool. And Evel Knievel will sell fast. And, you know, usually within 5 to 10 days, I usually sell it. So there's just collectors out there for it.
That's amazing. So people want Evel Knievel.
Yeah, it's a big thing.
All right, 312-981-7200. Okay, so as we look at all the people who called in tonight, I still think that Corey.
Yeah, that was a good story.
Who told us, I also think Doc had the Superman t-shirts, which is great, and then mm-hmm. told us about how he got into Superman, which led us to a different story about how he
rabbit hole, a wormhole.
Ordered a bunch of chicken from KFC.
Yeah, that was
But awesome. I think we go with Corey, right? I think Corey is the best brag because to be able to actually have a driver's license. It's not a poster. It's not a piece of memorabilia. It's
the real
Jones.
One. It's not even like a repro one that's in a gift shop or something.
That's so weird.
Yeah.
That's such a weird thing that you have a celebrity's driver's license. Yeah, and it's weird enough to get your prize tonight.
He had the wallet, too. Not only the license, but he had the wallet. So that's
I wonder if he tries to get into bars and he's like, yeah, here's my ID and it's Davy Jones. You're Davy Jones?
Right.
People wouldn't even remember, right?
Yeah, they won't.
Greg Flamm with us every Wednesday here on the 720 WGN and the Swap Meet. Great to have you back. I'm glad you're in full health.
Yep. It was fun. Always
good. Always good, man. I will see you next week. Yeah, all right. That's going to wrap up our show tonight. Okay. So tomorrow night is our big night. It is the final, the championship of our ultimate Chicago movie cage match. We've been doing this for a month and a half. We are able to get the 64 films. We did a bracket. 64 Chicago films to find the best Chicago movie of all time. And we are down to the final two. Can you believe it? And the final two are Ferris Bueller and the Blues Brothers. Those are the two that you chose. You chose online in the conversations, the texts, the calls. These are your two favorites. There is not a favorite here. I don't even know what the favorite is. It's so close. I just don't know. So tomorrow night, Patrick McDonald and Mario Smith will be here for the showdown between Ferris Bueller and the Blues Brothers. We'll do it at 8 o'clock, and I'll put up the poll that has all the numbers and all the ability to vote for this. I'll put it up on the WGN Facebook page tomorrow, and you can find it on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. We'll trust us. We'll put it everywhere. But tomorrow, the big showdown, Ferris Bueller versus the Blues Brothers. I don't know. I feel like it's an even spread. It's a pick 'em. It's a pick 'em. So that's coming up tomorrow on the program. And maybe we'll talk a little bit about Jussie Smollett because I kind of got into that a little bit about what do we really know about this story a year after it's happened. People started to text me, and I feel like I didn't have enough time to actually get into it. So maybe we can do that tomorrow as well. Nick DiGilio coming up next here on 720 WGN. We're in tomorrow, and we're in on Friday, too. Adam Davidson will join us on Friday. Adam Davidson, the writer for The New Yorker, wrote a new book about the passion economy, how the economy and the rules of the economy are changing. And he has been one of the award-winning journalists covering the economy since the crash in 2008. He's the guy behind Planet Money. You might listen to that podcast and also their website. But yeah, he will be here in studio on Friday. All right, so all that's coming up here on 720 for the rest of the week. Tomorrow night, the Ultimate Chicago Movie Cage Match Championship. Friday, we'll have Adam Davidson as we keep rolling along. Nick DiGilio up next after Vic Vaughn's newscast.